Blog Talk Radio.
Almost at him. Live on Blog Talk Radio. Candid Frank Live, the National Lacrosse League edition, with Aaron William Freeland, Gary Grube, sometimes Jared Harris, and Frank Stanishi, tonight, and Rocco Joseph Granato. Yes, okay, if I'm a little distracted, if all of a sudden I bail out of the show, it's for, anyway. Long story short, just in case I bail out, trust me, I can't help it. Hopefully everything will be okay. Anyway, having said that, we're going to talk about lacrosse for the first hour. This is our first version of a doubleheader, so if I seem distracted, please forgive me. Anyway, so we have our first doubleheader, and it is, of course, lacrosse has moved from Wednesdays to Friday at 9, and at 10 we'll continue with the football with the regular dudes and all that kind of stuff. So what do we have? The National Lacrosse League trying a new system, and to take advantage of that system, we have the Rochester Nighthawks, who were in Calgary, and Calgary won that first game. And as I said, Rocco and Aaron are here with me, and I just realized something, my studio thing here. Yeah, no, pray for us that my daughter's going to be okay. My daughter has, anyway. So basic. Hello, I hear. Oh, it's a dog barking. I thought it was you barking, Aaron.
Being a bit of a pain in the butt.
It's a dog barking. I thought it was you. So a great game. And Rocco, welcome to the program as well.
Thanks, Frank. I just walked in the door no more than 10 minutes ago.
I hear you. And last Saturday we went to Memorial for my wife's aunt, so we were in Newmarket. So I couldn't do the show with you last week. Sorry about that.
It's okay.
Didn't even have a chance to warn you. You know, we started in the morning, and it was all about getting ready to drive this long distance, bring her parents here, and take them as well as her sister. So it was a fun experience because I got to catch up on my wife's with my wife's cousin, who I've met a few times before. He's an original band member of April Wine. I don't know if you know Rock.
What?
I don't know if you know who. If you don't know who April Wine is, that's
oh,
yeah,
no,
that's
I know
Carolyn's.
April Wine.
That's Carolyn's cousin on the
oh,
Nova
nice.
Scotia side.
Huh.
And yeah, so
bro,
we got
that's
an invite.
Awesome. Are you kidding me? April Wine kicks ass.
I know they kick ass. They kick other things too. Amps, guitars, drums.
Holy smokes, Frank. I had no idea. That's awesome, dude. Seriously.
Well, neither,
like,
neither,
mine
neither,
was one of my favorite
neither.
Bands growing up.
Oh, you know what? We drove all the way to Montreal to see April Wine. So, and that's when I was in my teens, when they first came out, and it was a free concert. That's why we went. I remember the fence around the place. It doesn't matter anyway. So, hey, listen. So what a game. I mean, Calgary, you know, there were a lot of players that were hurt. You know, that game, guys, I mean, it was a laundry list of guys who either were hurt before the game started or got hurt during the game. It was a real physical battle, wasn't it? Rocco, you first?
Yeah, I mean, that was, I mean, I said it last week that Calgary has the talent to win that game in Calgary, and it wouldn't surprise me one bit if that would happen, and they did. They did what they had to do. I mean, they were without Jeff Snyder, and on the other side of the ball, Rochester was without Dan Dawson. So you had, you know, two big components out for both teams. And, you know, you sit there and you wonder, okay, if Jeff Snyder did play, what would have happened? You know, Calgary didn't allow Rochester to get on any type of a run. And you can check the tape, as Aaron said before. I said, if Calgary gets on a run, Rochester has to combat that, getting on a run of their own. They never did. Calgary would go on a three-goal run. Rochester would score one. Calgary would come back and score two more. And that's just how it went. Rochester never got into a rhythm.
Yeah, they never did. And And the other thing that I found amazing, Aaron, was the fact that Rochester wasn't able to kick it up a notch. Calgary didn't let him do it.
No, I was absolutely amazed by that. I normally, you know, Rochester is able to sort of pull something like that out of the bag with the guns that they have, and that they couldn't was just absolutely awesome. Not that I hate Rochester or nothing, but damn.
Yeah, sure, right. That's it. Yeah, that's your reasoning. I got your reasoning. I understand your reasoning completely. For some reason, I'm unable to forward the link to everybody. I apologize for those of you that are going to be forced to listen to this on the replay. The link's not working, and it is what it is. Now, hopefully I'll sort it out before the end of the show. So basically, Cody Jamison as well, he was limping around during the game. I'm not sure if he finished the game or not. Either you two noticed whether he did or did not finish the game?
Yeah, he did finish.
Yeah, he had a goal with 10 seconds left to make it 10-7. So he did finish, but for the most part, he was ineffective.
That was a lot of
Calgary fans weren't happy with him as well.
You think?
Yeah, well, you know, there was that whole, stop hitting me in the face with my own stick sort of thing that he was trying to pull. A lot of people weren't happy about. You saw that, right?
You got to give him an A for effort. Come on now.
Wow. Yeah.
You got to try something, you know?
Nothing else is working.
You know, it seems the European and South American football, influences has creeped into North American sports. I don't know whether there's always been the guys who, you know, enhance a call. That goes without saying. But to the extent that it is now, it is mirroring, European football. In other words, soccer. How frustrating is that?
Oh, it's very. I mean, that sort of thing, as far as I'm concerned, has no place in North American sports. But you don't need embellishments. If they're going to call a penalty, they're going to call a penalty. You know, there's no point for you to try to enhance it in any way.
I just find that in North America, what's becoming abundantly clear in sports, for the most part, is that you mentioned that play there. If you don't snuff it out early, it really takes a life of its own. We had the blowing in the ear incident in basketball, which I can't believe happened. We have in hockey where a player falls to the ice, and I don't remember ever a guy who falls to the ice where he lifts his legs up as high as he can so his skates are 3 or 4 feet in the air or 2.5, 3 feet in the air so he makes sure he hits the goaltender so the goaltender can't jump over him. I don't know if many of you, Aaron, you're a goaltender, you're aware of this, that one of the first things that happens when a player skates into a goaltender, a goaltender does the right thing all the time, if you ever notice. They always try to slow the guy down, but the way they do it is they jump up, make sure they don't get hurt, and they kind of, at the same time that they're stopping them, they kind of sit on him a bit. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's standard procedure for anybody who enters your crease. You're really not supposed to be there in the first place, so.
But if you raise your skates 2.5, 3 feet high, you've just taken away an opportunity for the goalie to protect himself because basically he's going to be jumping right into skate blades.
Well, I mean, that whole play is very similar to players sliding into second base with their cleats up to try to break up a double play.
Which is illegal.
As far as I'm concerned, it's chicken shit. But, you know,
exactly.
That's just my opinion, and I apologize for the language, Frank.
And but it's disrespectful to the game as well.
Indeed. I mean, the game of lacrosse isn't supposed to be played like that. The game of hockey isn't supposed to be played like that. It's not kosher.
Not at all. And you don't have to be Jewish to know what kosher is. Kosher is, you got to make it right.
Definitely.
There you go. Rocco, on this game, this is our first chance to see this system. Do you think that if there was only one game played, and one has to remember that really Rochester has the home floor advantage, which is why they're coming back to Rochester, so the first game would have been in Rochester. Do you think the result would have been the same? And I guess what I'm trying to do is figure out what's going to be the difference now, because we have a game two for Rochester to undo damage that they allowed to happen in Calgary and undo it at home in a full game and then a mini game if necessary.
I think this is one of those classic examples of a rope-a-dope. Rochester is hoping that Calgary kind of punches themselves out because they feel confident enough in their own abilities that they can take the game at home, plus the mini game. So
you think they really didn't care about losing that game in Calgary?
Oh, no, they cared. They cared.
That was a question on my part.
Yeah, they cared. The thing is, you were saying about, if it was just one game. Well, if it was just one game, Calgary wouldn't have made it to the finals. It would have been Edmonton, because the division finals were the two-game series as well.
Right.
So if you're going to say it was just going to be one game, the championship game would have been in Edmonton, so we don't know what would have happened. But like I said earlier, Calgary, could win that game at home. What Rochester has to do now is not do what Edmonton did. They cannot get a big lead and then allow Calgary to get momentum coming back. Because you remember, Edmonton had that huge lead on them, and Calgary came right on back, and even though they only lost it by one or two goals that second game, they had the momentum going into that 10-minute minigame. You can't let that happen. If Rochester gets up, let's say, we'll just say 15-10, and they got the momentum going and they're keeping the pressure up, they have to keep it. They can't allow them to get a three-goal run at the very end of the game because you only have 2 minutes to recover.
Well, that's the thing about the mini game. The mini game is what's going to change everything, more than anything else. Well, let me welcome our good buddy Gary Grube into
my
the group.
My partner, Amar.
There you go. Yeah, so you guys are going to do something live from the game or from Rochester?
Yeah, I'm planning on doing a live.
I did have we left.
Oh, okay. Scared them off.
I don't know. Let's try one more time, please. He messaged me. I wonder if he hung up on himself. We'll find out in a second.
But you didn't give him the right introduction. I mean, you got to build it up.
Yeah, you're probably right. I didn't do a good enough job. But that's par for the course. If you guys aren't used to that by now, I mean, there's no hope for you. Yeah, okay, I'll try turning on his mic again, and we'll see if this time it works. There we go.
Hey,
and joining us is Gary Grube.
How are you?
Good, thank you. Were we not going
to
answer
here
and fool him?
Everybody kind of went quiet when Gary came on.
Yeah. Oh, that is nice.
Wow, it's kind of frightening, isn't it?
Wow.
We all resting up for our big excursions tomorrow?
I got a
yes,
6 hour
they
drive
are
tomorrow.
Yeah, I've got a few hours of work to do before my 3 hour drive, so it'll be okay.
Look, are you going? Okay, look, Carolyn. Yeah, go ahead, guys. Okay, Gary.
Yes.
Tell us your interpretations of the first game.
Well, it was pretty much what I thought it should be. I thought Calgary played a great game. I thought Calgary had Rochester bottled up for a good chunk of the game. They played their defensive assignments beautifully. They took advantage of spots to score, because that's the only time they're going to get it. It's not going to fall into their lap like most days. And they capitalized. And they needed to come out with a win after that first game, and they did exactly that. I thought they played textbook game for a home game, especially when you got to go into the opponent's arena the next week. But I'm looking for Calgary to do even more this week. I just have this feeling that Calgary is just they're due. It's their time.
Look, guys,
well,
carry on and talk, okay, guys? Give me about 2 minutes. I got to say goodbye to my daughter if she's going to the hospital, okay? I'll be right back. Just continue. Let's talk about the last game and what surprised you, each one at a time. Gary, Aaron, then Rocco. And I'll go say goodbye to my daughter.
So for me, actually, I thought Rochester was going to have a little bit more jump coming out. Once it got established with Calgary's defense, that kind of went away. But I thought they were going to come out just balls to the wall and just try and push their point. Maybe I was wrong with that, but
I have to admit there was one part in the last game that had me cheering, and I think both you, Gary, and you, Rocco, know what I'm talking about. Was that point in the game where Matt Vince decided it was going to be awesome to play defense. Now, understand, I am a goalie, so I understand these sorts of things, and I can appreciate where the goalies are coming from. But if you're going to come that far out of your net to try to get the ball, let's be honest, you're going to face some opposition, and if they happen to lay you out and pop off your helmet like they did to Matt, it's going to happen.
maybe you can explain why he didn't get a penalty on the play.
No, I can't explain that. That's best left to the referees. I'm not, unfortunately, an expert when it comes to why the referees call what they call, but watching him come out like that and get absolutely stood up the way he did was absolutely beautiful. I was watching the game with my friend Jackie and my girlfriend Michelle, and we all cheered as soon as we saw Vince run out of the net because we felt it coming. And it was beautiful.
That just ain't right.
Are you... If any goalie comes that far over the net, he deserves to get smoked.
Yeah, I
guess. Anyways, Rocco, what was your take on that?
Oh, him coming out. I mean, I saw that coming from a mile away. Him getting hit. It's just, I'm just glad for his sake that it wasn't Jeff Snyder coming down the floor.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, that's just, yeah, he's trying to get something going, get some kind of a spark going, which is fine, but you know, you're risking also getting hurt in that game.
The good thing is we're quite heavily padded, so it's not really that big of a deal. But, no, I can definitely see where you're coming from that on that one, Rocco. I don't know. There was a lot about the way that Matt Vince played last week that kind of made me wonder what was going on. But I was actually glad to see him actually be willing to take some punishment.
Yeah, I think Calgary just got him out of his game. I mean, they went on a little run, and the offense wasn't doing nothing.
So do you think it was an attempt for him to kind of spark the team?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It had to. You know, and even if they knew that they weren't going to win that first game at that point, you know, with him coming out like that, you know, at least it'll, you know, give him something to look at for, you know, tomorrow night. But, yeah, I mean, Calgary, like I said, they just took him and the Nighthawks right out of their game by going on those runs. Two goals here, three goals here, only allowing Rochester to get one goal at a time. They never,
and
like
it took them forever to get that first goal.
Yeah, and they never got into a rhythm. And if you don't get into a rhythm, you're going to have a hard time winning the game, especially if you're on the road in Calgary.
And
the crowd.
I know we've talked about power plays before, guys. And I know that Rochester had 10 minutes in penalties. And when they went 2 for 4 on the power play. Do you think the difference in power play goals, 2 for 4 and 1 for 3, played into that at all, or is that just sort of happenstance?
Absolutely. You know, when the thing about penalties, and if you can take penalties and not suffer any punishment, it doesn't mean you're gonna take more penalties or you're gonna play that much more aggressive. But it does mean that you're not worried of making, you know, of taking a chance when you feel you need to. The opposite is true if the team's successful on the power play. Then you start to second guess yourself defensively. And Calgary had Rochester on the edge throughout the whole game. I think Rochester was concerned about their game. They weren't as aggressive as I remember them. I mean, they played like they did against Calgary that whole game. They played in spurts this year. We watched them at the ACC play like that at lengths of time, but they always got themselves out of a hole. And it seemed like Calgary, and I agree with Rocco, Calgary just stayed on them and didn't give them a chance to wake up, if you will, if I can use that term.
Well, I'm glad that they played the way they did, though, because this means there's a lot more excitement and a lot more pressure on Rochester if they want a three-peat coming into this weekend. So that should make for a dynamite game tomorrow.
Well, none of us want them to repeat or three-peat.
Speak for yourself.
Is that, oh, you want them to three-peat?
I you know what? I picked them in the beginning of the year to three-peat. Okay?
Oh, speaking okay. At, well, speak, in that
speaking,
case, then I
speaking
take
from,
back what I said.
Yeah, speaking from a media, I'll put that in quotes, side of it, okay? I picked them because they were there was very little change in their roster the last 2 years. Now, speaking as a Wings fan, no, I don't want them to three-peat. Because just like Aaron, he wants to see the Rock be the first team to three-peat, just like I want to see the Wings be the first to three-peat. And we both want our teams to have that seventh title before the other one. Okay, so speaking as a Wings fan, no, I don't want to see them three-peat. But as a, quote, media person, we had to make selections. I picked them to beat Calgary in the final.
By that, you mean but for the good of the league is what
yes.
you mean, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, just
speaking, bit of league less.
You know.
Yeah, I got you. I got you. I understand your motivation, and if your mic stops working shortly, it won't have anything to do with that.
my Canadian is showing. Go Calgary.
I'm kidding. Rocco,
I just had him picked from the beginning of the year.
Rocco, I can't hear you. Is something wrong with your mic? Your mic is fine, my friend. You're always welcome here. And you, even when you have a dumb opinion, I still like you. No, I'd like to see Calgary win. I think the boys said it right. You know, they're the Canadian team. That's the next best thing to the Rock winning is a Canadian team. And also, I mean, Calgary makes a point that I think we all want to see from our team, you know. This is a team that didn't have that quick a start. This is a team that works hard. And it's a team that has turned things around in a season that was so-so and then did some really good things. I mean, you know, they beat Edmonton. I mean, if you're from Calgary, there's nothing more pleasurable, no matter what position you are in the standings, either of you. Beating the other team is a great idea when you're in Calgary or Edmonton at any time for any reason. So, you know, Calgary... I guarantee you no Edmonton fans are rooting for him.
No, I guess not.
No, that's the way the West is. The West isn't like the East. Like, I can root for the Canadians, although a lot of Leaf fans won't, but I'm not a Leaf fan, so it makes it kind of easier. I can root for the Leafs in the playoffs. I can root for the Canadians in the playoffs because they're Canadian. Out West, it doesn't
same
work
playoffs.
That way.
You said that in the same sentence, right?
What's that?
Wow. Whew.
What, the Leafs in the playoffs?
And playoffs in the same sentence.
Yeah.
Am I?
Well,
and
hey,
fans.
Listen, I was just trying to make a point. If it ever happened, you know, if it were to happen, I don't want anybody to have a heart attack and you know, because
if
they
the Leafs
the
were
playoff.
To make, if the Leafs were to make the playoff,
your mic just went off, and I didn't do it.
No, I think we lost him because he said
can
Leafs
you believe
in playoffs.
That? His mic went off.
Very, very coincidental, isn't it, Frank? But you realize as soon as you say the Leafs in playoffs, people already started lining up at Maple Leaf Square.
No, you know what just happened. You know, yeah, you know what just happened. The phone lines went crazy because they're calling to ask us, really? The Leafs made the playoffs?
Exactly.
Rock,
these
are
the ones
who
are on their cell phones at Maple Leaf Square going, when's the game start?
I heard a click and then Rocco was gone, right?
Yeah, it was my – I got my phone on my waist because I'm – trying to get, get some of my stuff together.
Because the coincidence of me threatening to turn your mic off and your mic going off. It just,
going off.
There are a lot of people going, that Frank is a PR, isn't he? Holy mackerel, you suck. I didn't do it. It wasn't me this time. It's a big thrill for Calgary because, you know, the Western town cities are far more competitive against each other than those of us here in the East. But then again, you know, in the West, they take their sports seriously because, you know, the opportunities are a little rarer than they are, let's say, in places like Montreal and Toronto. In Toronto now more than ever. Montreal not so much, but, you know,
right.
Where you have all these sports, you know, we can get over the fact the Leafs don't make the playoffs because right about then the Blue Jays start and the Rock have been going for a while. So, you know, it's like Leafs are in the playoffs. I got something else I can do. Shoot, I got lots I can do, you know. So, yeah, it's great. I love the idea that Calgary is in. I totally am enthralled by the team and the way they play. And not to say anything bad about Edmonton. And Edmonton fans, please don't kick me in the behind when you see me. I didn't find Edmonton, even though they were on such a good run, I don't know about you guys, but I didn't find them that exciting, and I wasn't too enamored with their style. It was kind of sleepy.
Well, that's what made them cool.
Edmonton's whole style is rock-solid fundamental.
Okay.
Which is honestly never all that fun to watch, but it is effective.
And it was very good for them.
Oh, yeah. It definitely worked for them. So, you know, I mean, while they may not be all that exciting to watch, everything gets done that needs to get done. You know, they're rock solid when they need to be, and everything fell in their favor.
Unlike the Rock.
Well, I mean, the Rock got hot when they needed to get hot.
No, but
unfortunately, they couldn't stay hot as long as they needed to.
The Rock weren't rock solid this year. They were pebble solid.
No, Edmonton won a few face-offs is what they did.
Edmonton won a few face-offs. Yeah, you know, that's, you know, it's not supposed to be that important, guys. You know, that kind of stuff. But, you know, these two teams at the face-off circle, they really did do a good job against each other. I didn't look at the stats. I don't know.
But you didn't have Jeff Snyder in the lineup, so that changes a lot of things, too, if he's playing this week.
Is that what it was?
I think so.
Yeah, because it didn't seem like there was really that big a difference in the face-off wins.
There wasn't. It was like, I think, 59 to 41, something like that. It wasn't really that much of a difference. It wasn't like a 70-30 split.
Right.
Or it wasn't like one team didn't win a friggin' face-off in the entire second friggin' half of the friggin' game
in the playoffs.
What are you talking about?
Sorry, Rock. What? Not bitter.
You're hiding it so well.
Oh, I'm trying.
You can hardly tell.
It's in my voice. It's all in the voice.
you know, it does. As far as the game's concerned, though, we're approaching the midway point of the show, as far as the game was concerned, I was very pleased with the type of game it was. Even though Rochester didn't look like they had all their ducks in a row and they weren't pressing as hard as they could have, but there was a lot of excitement in that game. It was a great game to watch. I really enjoyed watching it. How about you guys?
I loved it because, you know, they're both explosive teams, so anybody can break out at any time. So as long as it's within reach, in which it was entirely throughout the game, you weren't really sure if that's the way it's going to sit out or one team's going to go on a four-goal run. Or what's going to happen if there's going to be a breakdown somewhere. So it kept me glued for sure.
Yeah. How about you, Aaron? Were you glued?
Oh, I was totally glued. I had had a couple friends over, had Michelle over and Jackie over, and we were both just we couldn't turn away. I mean, there were other options. Just couldn't.
Can it be possible? Let's talk about the upcoming game And here's the thing. I hope he answers the phone. I'm calling Serge Duvletien. And, Serge, answer your phone. Serge. Answer your phone, man. Anyway. And he's a super fan. Now, apparently, Calgary wasn't sold out. I just want you to know the kind of guy that Serge is. I don't know if he wants me to tell people this, but they almost had a sellout. And because they didn't have a sellout, Serge in Montreal bought a ticket to the game during the game.
Really?
Nice.
Hey, isn't that nice? Serge is one of my favorite people. And he has season tickets to every CFL game. And he doesn't go to the games. It's all
I was going to say, when you say every CFL game, do you mean like every single team?
Every team.
Wow.
Damn.
That's pretty wild.
I'll make sure that I remember it correctly. We'll talk to him about that a little later but I wanted him in here because he did buy a ticket to the Calgary game in the hopes that you know, he made sure that they had a full house. Or at least ticket-wise were sold. But he's not answering his
phone. They had 17,000. That's pretty impressive, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Especially on 1 week.
Yeah, he, you know, and I feel like saying to him, Serge, if you got a ticket to an Argo game, tell somebody. Maybe I'll talk to him about giving away his tickets on the show to people in other cities that don't have tickets to a game. It just seems like a shame that you buy a ticket and you don't use it. It's awesome. You know, I mean, I promote the idea. That's fantastic that he does stuff like that. And when he said that to me, I was totally amazed, and he was really pleased with The Rock winning. He's a big fan. He's a big super fan, if you will. Okay, so now let's shift locales. And of course, now we go to the home of the defending National Lacrosse League Championship, twice defended. Well, defended, twice defended. No, once defended. This will be the second time they defend again in a row. For the third, they have great fans, and they're going to have two more fans there, namely two guys that are in this room that are going to do a show from there, a pregame show, which I'm looking forward to. Well, let's start with the guy that isn't doing the pregame show that's going to be with me, or I should say I'll be with him at the European-style football game, TFC. So we're still going, right, Aaron?
Yes, sir, we are.
Okay. We still got to work out the how it's going to work. I guess what? We'll meet at the GO train, the GO station, whatever?
Yeah,
it's going to be a beautiful day.
We can meet at Port Credit. Actually, I'm going to be coming in from Scarborough. We can probably meet at the game itself.
Yeah, okay, at the gate or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and you get what station do you get off to go there?
I'm going to get off at Bathurst and take the streetcar down.
Can I get off at the GO train and get there?
Yeah, you can get off right at Exhibition Stadium place.
It's Exhibition Stadium, yeah. And then walk, what, underneath the tunnel?
Yep.
There's a new tunnel or something?
Right there, so.
Okay, perfect. Now, there is, you know, and I hate to change the subject a little bit because I know Gary is big on this, and I know Rocco's big on this, on being a visitor, you know, and wearing your colors as a visitor. You guys can relate to that, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And you also realize that there's a downside to that because there are some fans that don't handle the opposition that well. Now, lacrosse is pretty tame in that regard. Fair?
Yeah, some cities are.
Overall.
Okay, some cities. No, it's good. Hey, listen, I'm not looking for an answer. I'm just – because whatever answer you give, it just –
You're going to meet pylons anyways, right?
Right. And here's the thing. I'm contemplating, and I've been told not to do it because my wife might have to take out some extra insurance. I'm thinking of wearing my Argo gear to the TFC game.
Hey, you know what? I'll wear my Roadies jersey. I got your back. Done.
I don't think that's as bad as wearing the opposing team's jersey. We're still wearing a Toronto jersey.
New jersey between now and tomorrow morning?
You do realize that TFC fans hate Argo fans even more than the opposition.
Well, we're not really calling them all that smart, are we?
Okay. So I'm just saying, in some circles, what I'm doing is crazy. But I'm thinking maybe I'll have the nerve to do it, maybe even bring a flag and wave it and see what happens.
Tell you what, Frank, I'll wear my steel-toed shoes and I'll put on the foil.
So in other words, what you are both saying... So I guess by doing what you two are doing, I guess you're saying that this is going to be the last show that you're going to be doing tonight?
at least with all my teeth.
Becomes at least the last show of the season, yeah?
Well, unless it's done live from Toronto General Hospital.
If you do a live hookup, you can get a beating on the air.
There you go. Hey, from what I understand, Aaron... Maybe it wouldn't be such a bad sacrifice to get beat up in, you know, with all the money that TSN and Rogers and MLSE has. I don't know. I think the worst thing could happen. You know, I think they have a responsibility to protect us from such behavior. I think, right?
Well, and I also think by wearing a Toronto Argos jersey to a TFC game. You can sort of drive home the point that MLSE is screwing over another franchise just because they didn't get another $20 million from the federal government to rebuild the stadium.
Oh, don't worry. That's a discussion.
Might get your picture on TV so they can bring up the point, too.
Yeah, hey, you know what? Perfect. A little bit of red never goes bad with royal blue and white.
There you go. Or double blue, for that matter. No, I mean, sports worlds unite. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, you know what? We're all Toronto citizens, man. And
there
that,
you
that,
go.
That's what should be the uniting factor.
So when you guys go to the game, you know, I'm sorry, I diverged more than I intended to. I was just using that as a sampling for the question I was going to ask you. Have you decided what jerseys, if any, you're going to wear at the game, Gary and Rocco?
Well, yeah, I already know what I'm wearing.
What are you wearing?
I'm playing it safe because 2 years ago, Aaron can probably tell you, he saw it on Facebook, I got blasted for being a diehard Wings fan and drinking from the cup when Rochester won it.
Oh, yeah.
And I was wearing a Rochester Nighthawks jersey. And there was a little story with that, and I'll tell it real quick. A friend of ours, Melanie, asked if I wanted to drink from the cup. So I was like, yeah, sure, I'll drink from it. She goes, well, you have to wear a Rochester jersey. And she had hers, and she's a big fan of Patty O'Toole. She's like, well, you can wear mine. I was like, why would I want to wear a Patty O'Toole jersey?
There
all
you go.
Sudden,
he's a tool.
Well, all of a sudden, this big mitt hits my shoulder. I turn around. It's Patty O'Toole. I grab that jersey. I put the jersey on right away, and there's a picture of me trying to drink from the cup, and I'm in mass hysteria. And the people in Rochester know us of how diehard of a Wings fan I am, so everybody's taking pictures.
Yeah.
So now to play it on the safe side, I'm not wearing a Nighthawks jersey. I'm wearing my Crew Hawk jersey from Fan Cup last year.
Well, are you chicken, you know what? Come on.
Well, no, it has my name on it.
Oh, come on.
It's the logo, and plus the jersey I have a Scott Campbell jersey that I won at an auction. My wife's going to wear that one because my wife's going with me. She's
okay.
Going to, you know, we're going up tomorrow, so she's going to wear that jersey. And with my size, the jersey ain't going to really fit.
You talked me into it. So what I'm going to do, I went to a Hamilton Tiger Cats function. I don't know how much you know about our Canadian Football League there.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes.
Anyway, I'm an Argo fan, and then, of course, Toronto, right? And the Hamilton Tiger Cats are very close to Toronto. You may or may not know they're very close to Toronto. They have a team called the Tiger Cats.
Yeah,
and I wore my
blue and yellow.
Stuff.
I mean black and yellow colors.
Yeah, I wore my Argo pullover. You know, with the Argo insignia on it and all that stuff. And I walked into this room for a charity event for the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And most people took it okay, but some people had to be held back. And you know, I spoke to the CEO of the Hamilton Tiger Cats with this Argo gear on. He goes, you really don't expect to talk to me and interview me with that gear on, do you? And I said, why, is it a problem? And he said, well, it is Argo stuff. You know, look at all these people in here. They're going to look at me like I'm some sort of traitor if I talk. I said, hang on a second. So I pulled the pullover off, and I had the Hamilton Tiger Cats jersey underneath. So basically, there's ways around it. You know, you don't have to... You don't have to, like you said, you don't have to fly in the face of adversity, if you will. And I tell you something. So you'll be wearing that Gary Rock jersey?
No, actually, I have my old Toronto Nationals jersey to wear with Gary Gates' name on the back.
Oh, you mean the one when they used to be the Rochester Rattlers?
Way back, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, and black with red trim, so... It'll fit into what I'm trying to prove in there. But with a nice little maple leaf in my crest.
And there will be other people from Philly there, too. So some of them will be wearing their Wings jerseys. So.
Good. I need somebody to share a Yingling with.
Good stuff.
Now, are you talking about the fake Yingling they have at the stock?
Oh,
really?
I have to get the bottled stuff. I can't do any of that draft stuff.
Okay.
I asked for a glass of water, and it handed me a Labatt Blue. Oh, ouch.
And unfortunately, water's harder than that. So basically, the game this week. What do you think it's going to boil down to, guys? How about you first, Aaron? We haven't heard a lot from you the last few minutes. What do you think the game is going to come down to?
And
I take turns, guys.
I'll
I gotta
be honest,
get some.
I'll say what I've always said. It's going to come down to whoever takes the least dumb penalties. Staying out of the box is going to be absolutely paramount for
Calgary this game if they want to actually have a chance to take it on Rochester's home floor, because the Blue Cross Arena and the War Memorial was one of the most intimidating places to play in.
Yeah, just that horn alone is enough to deafen you. It's almost like Frank with a megaphone.
Ye gods.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, like I said, for Calgary to win this, they basically have to do the same thing that they did last week at home. They got to take Rochester out of their game, not allow them to get into a rhythm. If Rochester gets into a rhythm, it could be a long first game for Calgary. And then, like I said before, if Calgary goes on that little run towards the end of the game to kind of pick up a little momentum to, you know, even though, let's say, Rochester win the game by 3 goals, if Calgary goes on a 3-goal run to, you know, cut it in half like that, they're going to have that momentum. So they got to, you know, not allow them to do that. They have to, you know, they got to keep the pressure on them nonstop throughout the game. Full 60 minutes and then some. They just got to keep it going. And the crowd has got to stay in it.
Yeah, I agree with Rocco on that one. If Calgary hopes to win this thing, they have to play exactly what they did at home on the road. They have to be completely disciplined. They have to make sure that the Rochester's off their game, can't get their lanes open, have Matt Vince doing dumb things again just to get him off his game. And if they are able to succeed in that, they stand a chance of winning that game. I think they got into the heads a little bit of Rochester last week, and they're going to have to do things legitimately. They can't take stupid penalties because that's going to kill them.
Yeah. And, I mean, just to throw a little something in, I've heard from one of our mutual friends, Aaron, from Nabber, that a former Nighthawk will be at the game. Word going around, I'm thinking it may be Scott Evans.
Well, if you're thinking of former Nighthawks that might actually be at the game, probably John Grant Jr. would be the better way to go, because he's going to be returning to Peterborough in a week to play for them.
Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah, well, he's already signed with Peterborough, so
okay.
Odds are he'll probably be in town for something like that.
Yeah. It could also be Scott Evans.
Scott Evans played a beautiful left press box a couple of years ago, so very well could.
Oh, God, you guys.
I wasn't going there.
Well, you guys can be really mean, man. I'm glad I'm not a lacrosse player.
Oh, no, this is an elevated level of trash talk because we respect the players.
Right.
Oh, we
right.
really do, man.
Yeah. Right.
We do.
Keep saying that. You'll believe it. Just like, I'd never wear his jersey, then a tap on the shoulder, and of course, yeah, you don't really mean it.
Well, you know what, with the Patty O'Toole jersey, I talked to him in the beginning of that season in 2012, and
okay.
he told me during a practice session here in Philly, that's when they kind of played Philly in the little scrimmage game before the regular season started, he goes, we got a young team. We got a long way to go. And when they won the championship, I talked to him on the floor, I said, well, long way came pretty quick, didn't it? And we just, yeah, we've always talked, and me and Pat have always been, I guess, somewhat, you know, I'll say good friends as far as fan player goes, because like I said, we always make a trip up to Rochester at least once, if not twice a year, you know, to see them. So I've seen Patty play throughout his whole entire career and talk to him. So it's always been like a little ongoing joke.
Now, what I thought was really cool is I live down in Port Credit in Mississauga, and I've run into Patty O'Toole a couple of times because he used to have his boat down at the Port Credit Harbor Marina. So I'd be out drinking on the patio of a bar called Lake Effect, which is right at the front entrance. And Patty O'Toole would be there walking into the Mason's Chandlery to pick up stuff for his boat. So that was always kind of neat.
And advantageous.
Oh, definitely.
So we've figured out the answer to how you're going to win that game. But let's take it a little deeper. Why don't we compare goaltenders first, and each of you. And I'll start by saying I have to agree with the statements that were made, that Vince allowed himself to be affected by the game. And yes, if he doesn't control his reaction, we could actually see Calgary win their third overall National Lacrosse League championship. And that pretty much, that's the, I give the advantage there to Rochester. Rocco, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, I can't say it enough. I'll say it a billion times more tomorrow when Gary's sitting alongside of me and, you know, probably on the way down talking to my wife and one of our friends that are going with us on the way down. If Vince gets into his game mode, if he's on his game, he's making those stops, he's making those 10-bell saves, Rochester's going to be hard to beat, especially if they get into a rhythm. And, you know, I know firsthand from going into the Blue Cross Arena, the old War Memorial, I'm pretty sure Aaron knows it as well, that place gets loud. For it sitting a little bit over 12,000 people, it sounds like 20,000 in there. You get that crowd into the game, Calgary's not going to be able to hear themselves think out on that floor. That's why I say Calgary needs to take them out of the game, needs to take the fans out of the game. They need to get on that run.
And will, the goaltender, will the goaltender take them out of the game?
If Poulin is on his game, yeah, he could. He very much could, because you're looking at players like Jameson, Palace. If Dan Dawson's back in the lineup, even, you know, Joe Walters, and, you know, you can go right down the line, Corey Vitterelli, Joel McCready, all those guys. They had like five or six guys that were pushing 20 goals plus Stephen Keough. You know, you can't leave him out.
So goaltending is the key. Poulin's the key. So you figure Poulin's the key. He's the variable?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
How about you, Gary? Out of the box.
How about you, Gary?
I think the goaltending, I give the slight edge to Rochester, but that, again, depends on Vince. If Vince becomes a head case, then he becomes a liability a bit. If he's on his game, then he becomes the edge for Rochester. Poulin, most of the time, is steady as a rock, and he doesn't seem to get too high or too low on things going on. So that goes in his advantage. Again, it comes down to, with all that firepower that Rochester has, it becomes paramount that Calgary's defense doesn't chase them around. They need to be positional. They need to be blocking lanes. They need to be doing everything that they did before and completely do it again at 100% peak, because Rochester's backs are against the wall at home. So they have the seventh man with, you know, 97% of the fans in there. They have the whole essence of wanting to three-peat at home. They have the whole thing of that they've already lost a game, so their backs are up and they're like a wounded dog. So Calgary needs to be absolutely spot-on perfect to do this. Otherwise, they could have a very long day tomorrow.
Aaron, goaltending, who do you give the edge?
Who do I give the edge to? I'm going to go counter to everybody tonight so far, and I'm going to say Poulin. Calgary definitely, I think, in this particular game going in, has the edge. Poulin has proven himself to be a clutch performer when he needs to be. He's stepped up huge when Calgary has needed them to. Last game, Rochester had 43 shots, Calgary's 41, but he still had the edge over Matt Vince, who was supposed to be Mr. Unstoppable. Matt Vince is going to be the wild card. You get under his skin in the same way that you get under Anthony Cosmo's skin in Buffalo, and it's all over. It really is. Calgary needs to get out there early and start chirping Vince early, put a couple quick ones past him and start laying into that and highlighting the fact that he's kind of porous, and I'm pretty sure they'll have the game.
Now we have a Jeff Snyder for that one, don't we?
Well, if he's back, and I don't think he's going to be. From what I've heard, Jeff Snyder isn't going to be playing. So,
see, there's a big blow to Calgary also, that intangible of winning faceoffs constantly.
So, goaltending, we've discussed. How about as far as what player or players do you think will be the difference makers? Your call, guys, whoever you think. We'll start with Gary. Gary?
Well, I'm thinking that for Calgary, Dolby is going to be the absolute catalyst on this thing. As he goes is as the team goes. And I think for Rochester to be Jameson. He, if he's not scoring, is usually making plays. The only other one I could think of is Sean Evans. If Sean Evans can be the playmaker that he's been all year long, and seems to can muck it up in there. he might be the little intangible there for Calgary.
Rocco?
Okay, yeah, I had to take my mute button off. I had dogs in the back barking like crazy.
Don't worry.
Yeah, I mean, Gary basically took the words right out of my mouth.
Shame on you,
you know,
Gary.
Dane Doby, you know, Dane Doby is, you know, prime enemy number one for the Nighthawks right now. You know, he's just, you know, ball goes in a stick, it's in the back of the net before you know it. You look at Curtis Dixon also. He's, you know, going to be the same thing. But my main person would be Sean Evans. He's the main person here because he could just spark a team in a snap. You know, you can get your three goals from Dixon, three from Doby, you know, what have you, and you could still be down by two goals.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, Evans pops one in, he pops a second one in. And before you know it, the momentum is switched. So it could just be that one or two goals that he scores that just sparks everything. So he would be, I guess, enemy number one,
mm-hmm.
you know, for me, as far as, you know, the Nighthawks looking on the defensive side, you know, to stop Calgary. On the Rochester side, it's really going to depend on whether or not Dawson is playing. If Dan Dawson is in the game, you got to watch out for him. He may only get one or two goals, but he's going to rake up 8, 9, 10 assists possibly. So he's going to be a main target there. But other than if you take Dawson out of the picture, it's got to be Cody Jameson. He's got to be the go-to guy. And he's got to be the one that Calgary keys on. They could say, you know, other people can beat us. We don't want, you know, Cody to do it.
Aaron?
I'm just looking at the list of players that we got here. You know, looking on the Calgary side, I mean, you've got Evans, you've got Dixon, you've got Veltman, you've got McBride on defense, you've got Dobby, you've got Ranger, you've got Shatler. Shatler was relatively low-key in the last game, 1 goal, 2 assists, 7 shots. But the contribution that these guys can have, and if they wake up and get a little extra floor space, they can be really, really dangerous. The game-breaker, I think, for me, on the Calgary side, I'm going to have to go with Sean Evans on this one. He may not score a lot of goals, but, damn, that man can set people up. You know, that's just absolutely awesome to see. On the Rochester side, you know, I'm looking at guys like Joel McCready, who had 3 assists last game. Craig Point was a surprise with 2 goals. That was nice. Corey Vittorelli had 1-1. He's going to be big. Stephen Keough. I'm going a little bit further down the list. If Cody Jameson wakes up and gets his head out of his butt and tries not to dramatize everything the way that he did in the first game, then he can be very, very dangerous. At this point, honestly, going into this game, it's going to be a crapshoot as to who's going to win. It really is, because it's all up in the air. These are two really well-matched teams that play really competitive styles of lacrosse. They don't give quarter to anybody. But honestly, for Calgary, I'm going to be looking for Shatler to have a big game, and I'm going to be looking for Dobby to have a big game, and for Rochester, I'm going to be looking at Stephen Keough and Cody Jameson to break out of his funk and have a good game.
Now, you know what? With a couple of minutes left, I think maybe we can do this. Why don't we figure out? I don't know if it's too soon to do this, but let me see how much time we got left. Where's the big clock? There it is. We got about 4 or 5 minutes left. Yeah, you know what? That'll be enough time. Tell me what you think the final score will be. And obviously, if Calgary wins, it'll only be one game. Will Calgary win the game in overtime? Will they win it in the mini game? Will they just win it outright without the mini game? Let me know that. Let's start with you, Gary. What do you see as the scenario that you'll witness in Rochester on Saturday?
I think Calgary wins it 12-10. Empty net goal makes it the 12th goal.
What?
I think Calgary
I needed like about 30 seconds, Gary. What's with the 10-second review?
I thought you were talking about being up against the wall here.
I love that. No, that's not. Hopefully the other guys figure there'll be more to the game than that. No. And that's fair. It's, you know, Calgary's just not going to let go as far as you're concerned, and I'm good with that. So, Aaron, what about you? What do you see as how it'll play out in Rochester on Saturday?
My prediction is going to be 11-8 Calgary. Calgary with two open net goals because Rochester's going to pull Vince with about 3 minutes left, and Calgary's going to pop one, and they're going to try it again with about a minute and a half to 2 minutes left, and Calgary's going to get the second one. Calgary will go into a defensive shell, and that's all she wrote.
Rocco.
Damn. You know, it's just, it's a real shame that Gary's not going to stick around for the post-game party, because I could bet him drinking.
No, actually, I just got a hotel room. I'm sticking around.
Oh, great. Okay. Then we'll bet a couple of drinks on this, if you want.
Got it.
He's going to drink
at
regardless.
Yeah. And, Aaron, we could settle up during Fan Cup. Who knows? There'll be a lot of drinking during that. I'm looking at Rochester winning that first game. They're going to win that first game. I'm looking at 12-9. They need to explode out, and that's what they're going to do. They did it against Buffalo. Granted, Calgary is a different team, but they were down 1-0 to Buffalo, and they came home, and they did what they had to do. They're going to win the first game 12-9. The 10-minute game, like I said, it's going to depend on how the end of that game is. If Rochester keeps that momentum, Rochester's going to win that 10-minute game. They'll win that one, I think, 3-1. If not, if Calgary gets that momentum, we could be seeing what we saw
against Edmonton.
It was against Buffalo, where
Buffalo?
the 10-minute game was tied, and then we went into an overtime.
Oh, okay. Okay, now I got you. Okay. With Rochester.
We could be seeing that, but I still see Rochester coming out, winning the 10-minute game. I'm going to say 3-1 on an empty net goal, winning the first game 12-9. And then, unfortunately, like I'm saying, three-peating, speaking from the media side of it.
There you go. I think and believe, but, you know, for what it's worth, however many drinks I'll lose for saying this if I'm wrong, or how many I'll win if I'm right, I'm going to say that the game is going to go to overtime, and Rochester's going to win, and it'll be like 12-11, I'm going to say, 12-11 in overtime. And then, like, I think that's what you said, if I understand correctly, then the 10-minute game is going to go into overtime, and it's going to be 4-3 for Calgary. And I think Calgary's going to win the championship by the narrowest of margins in history. And if they go to overtime in both those games, the regular game and the mini game, that'll be a new record because it's never been played before. So it'll be historical. No matter what happens in those games, it's going to be historical. And finally, with the last few seconds we have on the show, guys, give me we'll do this again next Friday and review what happened, on Saturday to complete our National Lacrosse League season. But for now, really quickly in short terms, greatest moment for you in the NLL season thus far? Rocco.
Oh, thus far? I would have to say, if we're including Edmonton's 14-0 run, that had to be up there. Or there's just so much. You have Edmonton's 14-0 run. You had Buffalo losing 8 in a row and then knocking out Toronto in the first round and taking game one against Rochester. Just so much. And you got Calgary's play, but I'd have to lean towards Edmonton starting off 14-0. Nobody seen that coming from miles away.
Gary?
I thought this, though. You had Colorado, who was floundering through most of the year. They come knock off Edmonton, and all of a sudden they become a very viable team down the end stretch. Almost beat Calgary to get into the next round against Edmonton. So I thought that was a pretty interesting thing and a very turn point, because Edmonton's season changed on that loss, and Colorado's season changed on that win.
Aaron?
The most interesting part of this season for me was watching how utterly and completely Minnesota failed after knocking off Toronto last year. after that 20-13 playoff win, there were a lot of high expectations for the team, and then the fact that they floundered and bottomed out as bad as they did was kind of a shock to me. But at the same time, it made it interesting.
Perfect.
That's just me. Yeah. I revel. I have this whole Schadenfreude thing going on. I revel in other people's failures.
I bet you do. Well, guys, what I've enjoyed the most about this season is meeting Rocco and getting another angle on being a big rock fan, and having good friends like Aaron and Gary and Jared as well, who let's just say that life has made it difficult for him to join us most nights, but he's always here in our hearts, and we wish him the best and hope everything's going really well for him now. And I really thank you guys for what we've done so far this year. We've still got one more week to go. And I look forward to a Canadian team winning a championship. And that'll be my next great thing for this year, guys. You're welcome to hang around. I'll play the CFL intro, and we'll move on to the next part of the show, the second half of the doubleheader, the CFL. Live here on...
You.
What was that?
I was going to say, Frank, there is one guaranteed Canadian win each and every year, but that's, you know, pretty much a certainty.
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. That is just way too funny. Okay, let's play the opening. It's time to talk football. Live. On Blog Talk Radio. The Candid Frank Live Show.
Candid Frank Live.
With
about half of y'all motherfuckers here.
John the Argo Boat Logo Granger.
Candid Frank Live.
Christopher Lion's Den Jones. Mike. The CFL is the best football in the world, Townsend. Kelly, Rough Rider Daddy Bale. Manasseh, Blog Talk Radio Show, Geber Medine. And Bruce, Hamilton Tiger Cat, 13th Man, John Inch. Another wonderful Friday, and now that the CFL season is clearly upon us, at least the negotiation season, we have an opportunity to bring lacrosse on to Fridays, the first hour of the doubleheader, the second hour of the doubleheader with possible overtime. The only difference in overtime in our football show is I can't call anybody during overtime because I lose access to the phone, because I'm not supposed to be on the air. I'm only supposed to be on the air for 2 hours. But the fair trade is that they let us do the show with the guys that are still in the room, or gals, whoever happens to be in the room. So I just want to make that clear. If we go beyond midnight, and if Manasseh's here before midnight, we'll end up going beyond midnight. Anyway, I wrote this thing, and it was really nice. I wrote it, and I was so proud of what I wrote. I put it on so many places everywhere, and I know that not everybody's going to agree with what I wrote. But that's okay. And then I discovered that I shipped out the rough draft instead of the finished draft. So I'll read the finished draft for you. It's a little shorter, but basically says the same thing in hopefully a little better way, I think. I think it's fair to say a little better way. All right. Dear Mr. Cohan and the owners of the CFL teams, and of course those like me, the fans, and those that, like me, are a season ticket holder, we support our league. Always have, always will be. Even on the internet, we support the team on internet radio, and that, of course, is the Candid Frank Live CFL Is show. And the theme is the CFL is the greatest football in the world, a great phrase created by Mike Townsend. Thank you, Mike. And, you know, we do this show at my expense. The guys, well, it doesn't matter whether they're willing or not. The point is I do it at my expense with the great help of others, year-round active, hardcore, up to 3 hours a night like the other night, three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And, Christopher, yes, 10 p.m. to 12 a.m., we're going to our summer hours. I gave it careful consideration. And the reason I'm doing it is because our friends in B.C., not to mention names, Christopher, means that the show starts in B.C. At 7 p.m., which is a better time frame for Christopher, who closes up the shop at 6 plus. He can sashay home and get the fire on the barbecue going and then do the show while he's barbecuing. So, sorry, John Granger, but, you know, we'll work it out. It'll all come up in the wash. So, we are vocal fans of every team in the league in Canada. Our fans of the show and participants of the show are from the United States, and not just the continental United States. They come from the Mideast, Europe, Africa, Pakistan, and other places. Because they love the game of Canadian football, and there isn't a lot of places, or aren't a lot of places, to talk the game. Now, I agree with a lot of people that, you know, the theory of supply and demand, you know, like in real business, you know, in the real business world, is all about spending what you have to get what you want, essentially. Now, I believe it's true that you can control employees' wages that way in that situation. But where the employees, you know, are just employees, not the product or the inventors of what it is that they're selling, or they have any concerns or caring for the business 24/7, you know, 365 days a year, you know, to infinity and beyond, like the movie says. Possibly, if you're not that type of person, you deserve a different consideration. And in the case of the CFL players, they are the product. You know, they deserve different rights because they're just a little bit different than those other employees. Not better, different. The players invest, and CFL-sanctioned handlers, time, the costs of being a football player. They include supplements, you know, things that they have to ingest legally, hopefully, legal stuff, hopefully. You know, maybe rent a training facility, be part of a training facility, have personal trainers, you know, all that kind of stuff. These are expenses that football players have that normal employees don't. And, of course, they risk their good health so that the product, they themselves, is not only is viable, but desirable and worth at least a look from the powers that be. And at the same time, on this adventure, risking everything, which health is the biggest thing. In the CFL, the owner assumes the risk for framing and supporting the product with the right mechanisms to ensure customers, new owners, they all want to share in this product. The players, I understand, have a choice. They can agree to deal away their long-term rights, deal away the opportunity to share profits. But the inconsistency of the players being the only ones on a line on the budget requires a cap. Now, I may be simplistic and simple-minded, but it does appear to me some may see players as the most transient of employees in the CFL and things in the CFL, including, you know, things. Therefore, they're easy to control, and in controlling them, they control cost, for the CFL owners due to what I think is a misrepresentation or an error in judgment, their long-term participation, which in turn reflects their power or the perceived power that they deserve or have. The rhetoric seems to be, who cares about the players? Let's count to 10, and there'll be a whole new set of players to take or leave whatever they're offered. The inconvenient truth, my friends, may be that the players are year-to-year staples in our league for a decade and more. There are a lot of players that fit that definition. Not all of them, but there are of many. It may be considered reprehensible to consider these players as no more than migrant workers and maybe less. If the cost of a football goes up, does the league freak out as much when the players want a bigger piece when the pie gets bigger? Is it shameful and discriminating to offer perceived unfair low share to players under the guise of free enterprise? Every other week, and this reference is only because he's in, generally speaking, my neighborhood, being Ricky Ray. I've never been to his house, don't know him personally, all that kind of stuff. Do talk to him after practice. He's a nice guy. My understanding is he cashes a check every 2 weeks for $50,000. It's because he earns $500,000 a year. Now, to me, that sounds great. Sounds good to me, like he's doing pretty good. And but don't sit on that. I'm not done yet, okay? And sorry, Ricky. On average, the CFL players earn about $6,000 every 2 weeks, and at a minimum of $4,000 every 2 weeks. In that very same time period that Ricky gets 50. Again, no kidding here. I'd love to cash all those checks. I truly love and respect what these young guys accomplish on the gridiron, especially what the Argos accomplish, like the Grey Cup. Now, what we may or may not forget, but I want to remind people, these guys probably work three times the length of a season. Okay? Just so they can ensure they can compete directly with the rest of the players vying for the same 400 jobs. And I think probably 10 to 20 times as many players are trying for those 400 jobs in some way or some capacity for consideration from the NFL management teams. To me, this is not a corny statement. This is not me trying to sound all buddy-buddy with the players. Because to be honest with you, if I was a smart guy, I'd back the owners and the management teams. They'll be around a lot longer than the players. Even if the players aren't short-term, as some suggest, even if they're here for 10 years plus, management's here even longer, as are the owners for the most part. But these guys, to me, that I've met over the past few years, up close, because I've decided to, with the help of John Granger, to be a shareholder in the CFL as a season ticket holder. Okay, that's exaggerating that point. But still, I have a vested interest in how the CFL operates, and I have a good idea of what I want to see. And part of what I want to see is these special, very special guys, unique, hardworking, thoughtful, actively community conscious, and most of all, they're special to me as human beings. Unfortunately, the sad part for me, yeah, I said that. Unfortunately, these men seem to have less respect from other human beings and not on a level playing field with the other human beings that are hired by the CFL. And if you look to how the league spends money and how they intend to control money, probably respect inanimate objects even more than these players because of the CFL budget and the way it works right now. Just wanted to get that off my chest. I don't know if it worked or anything. If anybody, I know there's going to be people on fire. Well, this first guy here, he's going to be more or less the guy that agrees with me the most. We'll get to the guy that agrees with me the least at the end, maybe. What do you think, Kelly?
Absolutely, bud. I mean, you know, I've been on the player side this whole time, and, you know, they can call me biased because I'm friends with the CFLPA president, but I'm also from a union household, and I, you know, live by the principles that a union has. And I just want to remind everybody, to add to what you said, the last word in the email that Scott Flory sent to his entire membership this week, the last sentence that he wrote was, "We will take care of you. You will be taken care of." And that's a statement in solidarity. And these guys can do it for a little while. I mean, everybody doubts, you know, and says, oh, they'll be running back 3, 4 weeks, 5 weeks maybe. No, I don't think so. I mean, these guys are grown men. They have investments. They have certain things. Certain ones can help others that need. And they'll be billeted, allegedly, is what the rumor is, within their cities with players that own homes and such. And they're digging their heels in, and it's their turn. If they don't dig their heels in, I think the same exact thing's going to happen next round with the CBA.
And even worse.
Sure. And it's been proven that people that take job action get results. So props to them, I mean, for having the courage. And I think I mentioned a few months ago, like, Scott Flory has the opportunity to be the Ted Lindsay of the CFL. And that's exactly what is upon us.
Well, that's – I'm just going to move down the line. And let's see, 661 – trying to remember. Okay, that's Christopher. 661 is Christopher. Christopher.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Hang on a second. I got to brace myself. Okay, I'm braced.
Okay, first off, there's a salary cap in the CFL not to hold the players back or to stop that. It's to protect the owners from doing stupid things and spending millions of dollars to bring players up. It was
okay,
to protect
okay.
teams.
Let me finish. No, I'll let you finish. But you're repeating something that isn't true. You're starting with a non-factoid. You're starting out with hot air.
I am not. That's
you're
exactly
saying that
the
you're,
fact.
Here, let me challenge what you just said, because I'm interrupting
well,
you.
I was going to try to challenge your entire rant earlier
okay,
on,
can,
and I
no,
had
no,
my
you
mic
can challenge,
was muted.
You can challenge what I said, but really you've said this before, and you've said the cap is a way of controlling and protecting the owners. But how come with all the different lines of expenditure the league has, only one requires a cap? That's all I wanted to ask you, and that's all I wanted to throw in.
Because
you
that's the
going...
only one that you can go stupid with your expenses on.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
that's your opinion. That's your opinion, and I respect your opinion, Christopher, but I disagree. Continue. I disagree. I think every owner goes crazy in every area given the opportunity.
Yeah.
They hire three coaches and pay three coaches at once, but they don't pay three players.
This happens how many times?
It doesn't matter how many times. Don't they?
It happened
they protect
once in
themselves?
Toronto, and because it's in Toronto, it's the entire league.
Happened in Saskatchewan. Happened in Hamilton.
Well,
and the only
I don't
reason
see
hasn't
my owner doing
BC
that.
Because it, the only reason it hasn't happened in BC is because you've got a guy who basically can afford to be intelligent, and that's why they can afford to spend money in other areas. But the fact – no, listen, I interrupted you. I just wanted – and it's important because – I've heard you say that over and over again, and you never mention that they're the only you're telling me the players are the only way owners get out of control. I just disagree with that, and I wanted for once to be able to say that. So go ahead, and you can rake on anything I say, and I respect everything you have to say, Christopher. I really do, but that's just unfair and disingenuous. At least it sounds disingenuous. Because
okay, I came out with 10 seconds of verbiage, and you've abused me for 5 minutes afterwards.
You're right. I'm guilty. Consider me guilty. And undue damage I've done. Thank you.
And as bad as John Granger.
Thank you. I accept that as a compliment.
Okay. Now, the salary management system was put in place in which to protect the owners or the teams from spending too much money to build a team that is too powerful and too strong over top of other teams in the league that were did not have the availability to do that, i.e. it was the Riders.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And they were going bankrupt, and other teams were spending $3 million a year to have Ishmael playing on their Toronto Argonaut team. Okay?
Sure.
So the salary cap came in for the simple reason to keep a level playing field across the league. Yes. Does it need to be raised? Yes. Does it need to be raised by a respectable amount? Yes. There's over 12% on the table right now to raise the cap from where it was to where it's going to be. In fact, it's now higher than that. It's now gone from 4.4 to 5.1, and it still got pissed on by the players. They want 6.2. Now, I understand that they want 5.8, except for all of the other things that they now come in, which raises it up over $2.4 million from the 4.4 that it was originally at this year. Okay? Read
right.
The stats. Read the offers. What they're asking for, no human being in this country is getting as a raise, not even postal workers. So, and, you know, it sickens me to death. I was raised in a union family as well, Kelly, and it sickens me to death when people use the word solidarity in their union things. Solidarity was done in Poland when those life and death conditions for those workers meant something. To turn around and use it in the union environment in Canada is disgusting. It's
your
disgusting.
Opinion.
It's
your
repugnant.
Opinion.
Towards those workers who actually fought for their lives.
But you know, I have to defend what you're saying by saying this. It is also unfair to have people who are profiting pretty good hiding behind the lack of profit of others. That's pretty
Who's
disgusting.
Who's profiting
too.
Really well? Really? Who is profiting
is there,
really well
is
in
there,
this league?
Is there not? A clear indication that some teams don't make money and some teams make a little more than no money. They make quite a bit more.
There's one team in this league that made money last year that turned into profit.
Well, you
Can
know,
you tell me what team that
me,
was?
Winnipeg. Profit to
Calgary.
Me, okay. Well, Winnipeg did pretty good, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Winnipeg, Edmonton, and Saskatchewan all did, but they're community-run teams. They're nonprofits. It is not profit. The money has to go back into the team.
Yeah, but okay?
All right. So get it right.
Okay, no.
It's
hey,
not
hey,
profit.
But here's the thing.
You can't call it profit in a nonprofit
environment.
Here's
the thing. You're 100% right, and you have my and I bet you even Kelly agrees with you that a cap is a good thing. But a cap that denies, in my opinion, and Kelly, I don't want to put words in your mouth, and it will bring on somebody else into the conversation. A cap that holds back a football player from getting a fair share of profit, if you will. I like to talk about profit, and that's what they should get a fair share of. And you're making our point, really. You're making my point. When you suggest that those three teams aren't allowed to make a profit, then what's wrong with giving the players a little more profit? They're just going to throw back a little less is all. All right? If they're really
giving the players – excuse me, Frank, do you not understand the difference between $4.4 million and $5.2 million? $800,000, is that not enough?
Oh, hey, it probably is enough. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that. You see, my problem – my problem, you know what? My problem is going to come after I bring in somebody else, and I think this is Serge.
Oh, hey, hello.
Hey, Serge. I know you're not much for this kind of conversation. You're one of those guys. You're one of the true blue. You're one of the true blue sports fans.
I have to wait for the Habs to get out to get back. So we had a nice run. It was nice.
Yeah, we did. I enjoyed it. I'm not a Montreal fan, but. If I'm hearing the Canadian national anthem before the hockey game, And the reason I'm listening to it because of a certain team, I'm rooting for that team. Because now hockey means nothing to me. Hockey means nothing to me. Hockey means nothing to me now. There's no Canadian national anthem. Only our money is involved. None of our...
There's a lot of Canadian...
I don't buy that Canadian player thing. I'm sorry. I don't buy that Canadian player thing. I have friends who are nurses.
We're going to have the cup back in Canada one way or the other. So.
Yeah, no. I'm just saying. I'm sticking to it. I'm just saying. It's, you know, I heard somebody tell me that we teach and we create the most nurses in the world. None of them are here, but we do a great job of, you know, they end up in Florida and North Carolina and South Carolina. And I should be proud of the fact that we produce so many nurses, but we're short of nurses because we underpay them. So
we encourage them? No. So
exactly.
No, we don't underpay them, Frank. Other people overpay them.
Okay, then fair. But I think you get my point. Don't brag about how good the nurses are in Canada when none of them stay here. That's my problem. That's the problem I have with what you said, Serge, not with you. That's only a problem I had with what you said. Not what that it came from you. That's what I don't know.
I was mentioning that on the RDS French news report today that the Argos and the Alouettes apparently are two teams that have been pointed out as being financially in trouble.
Yes.
And the director of the Alouettes, Paul Harris, was mentioning that one of their problems is that they're paying four different types of rent. They're paying rent for the McGill Stadium. They're paying rent for the Olympic Stadium. They're paying rent for the practice field. And they're paying rent for building downtown for the offices.
Right, and they're paying whatever the price is that asks. And they're paying what's asked. There's no debate.
Yeah.
They're prisoners.
Yeah. So I'm going to the training camp Sunday morning, early. So today was the golf. A lot of players didn't show up today. For whatever reason, but it was the first time they ever did the golf this early, like before even training camp. And we had Ocho Cinco go to the Habs game this week and give his first interview. And he'll be fun.
He tweeted from the game. He was impressed. He was impressed with the hockey. And
the team won and everything back Tuesday. So yeah, he was impressed with the whole. And it's interesting because somebody asked him, do you plan to return to the NFL? He said, no, I'm happy here. I want to stay here. I want to, I think he wants to finish his career at 36 and some.
Can you imagine?
I think that's a nice, selling point for.
Exactly. And Serge, you're in the unfortunate position where you don't really appreciate the wonders that are or exist in Montreal, Quebec. I mean, that guy goes into a city that is unbelievable for an outsider. For anybody that's been to Montreal, that's an outsider. We may, and I'll be honest, we may complain about the attitude towards those of us that are Canadian and English. We may complain about that. How much truth there is in it today, yesterday, tomorrow, I have no idea. I'm not here to pass judgment. But when you go to Montreal, you're entering a whole different world. And for a guy who's earned a lot of money and doesn't mind adventure, it's an interesting prospect.
Well, there's no pressure here because football is not hockey. I mean, football players here, they can be incognito. They're not harassed. They can go anywhere, do anything they want. And people here, because it's kind of the sad part is that people here don't care that much. So that's why players, like it.
It's
here.
A two-edged sword. It sucks, but it's also
good. It's not like
good
Regina, where everything is about football and all. I mean, Regina's a great city, but everything, you're a football player there, you're going to get noticed. While here, you're a fly on the wall. So
yeah, but you're just making an honest point based on honest fact, and it's not a problem for anybody. Joie de vivre is something that. Is a French saying that is basically, we have a phrase for it in Italian as well, and basically it just says the joy of life. It is what you want it to be. Let's hope it can be what you want it to be. And for Ocho Cinco, or Quatre Vingt Cinq, I guess, that's how you say 85 in French, right?
It's Witt Cinq.
Witt Cinq?
It's going to be Witt Cinq. He made it clear that he wants it Witt Cinq, 85.
That's stupid.
They even mentioned that.
85.
But isn't it Kata
cool.
Vincent? Isn't 85 Kata Vincent?
Yeah, I know, but because Ocho
no,
Cinco
but for
five,
his purposes, he would like 85.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, okay.
Eight,
fair
five,
enough.
As opposed to 85.
Okay,
that's
and on
eight,
that
five.
Note,
yeah.
On that note, let's bring in the last two guys because it's my fault, guys. I apologize. As you all know, anybody who's listened to this program, you know full well that Christopher and I always disagree. And because of that, I should have went to him last, but I didn't. I made that mistake. But I got to tell you, I don't love anybody more than I do Christopher because, as I said to my wife today, that friggin' Christopher has to go and mention changing the show to 10 o'clock. You know why I hate Christopher so much? It's to my wife. Because the friggin' guy's right. So what do you do? You either grow up and grow a pair and do the right thing and not worry about how it affects you that much. So we are going to do the show at 10 o'clock from now on, just so you guys know. And it's not good for guys like Irish and I who have wives who are waiting for them in bed. No, wait a minute. You don't have a wife for you. You have a different woman waiting for you every night, right, Serge?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah,
sure.
Of the four-legged kind.
Of the four-legged variety. I have the four-legged variety that walks around
every
me
day
at
work,
and go to bed. Yeah, yeah. No, I kid. The point I'm trying to make is that the hardest part for me to do the show at 10 o'clock our time here is that it means my wife says, see ya, buddy, I've had enough. And I'm not saying it ruins our relationship. Let's just say it doesn't make the relationship better. But you know what? She understands. So for that reason, I'm willing to do it. Without her permission, I wouldn't do it. So this is not a sacrifice. This is just an opportunity to make a decision that satisfies Christopher for the right reasons. End of story. Also with us as well as Manasseh, who's here as well now, I think, John... not John Granger, I was going to say, but the Mike Townsend, the man behind the CFL Is name, which to me is something that I'm very grateful for. And you can use that my stuff anytime you want because now you see, my friend, we're kind of married to each other. Your verbiage now is attached to my what I started here with my program that is useless without you and the others that are in this virtual studio.
Well, thank you, Frank. I do appreciate it. And I won't use it for my own personal popularity.
You can do it,
you
too.
Know what I'm saying?
I want you to do it for
thank
that
you,
reason. Because remember, and I say this to everybody here, there is not a single person in this group, and there's more of you that aren't here tonight, that hasn't done more than enough for my satisfaction that I wouldn't be proud that you would carry the name of the show anywhere. So let's make that clear. What's good for you is good for me, my friend, and don't make the mistake of thinking it's a one-way street. The popularity that you build on yourself using the show's name is popularity you're helping me with, and for that I'm eternally grateful.
And we do promote the show endlessly.
Exactly, and I'm grateful for that. And I'm grateful for that. I truly am.
Oh, yeah. I'm grateful for you for having me on the show, man, for the first time, because you're going to put me on the map, Frank.
You know, you put yourself on the map. All this is, you know, we did a show, Mike. You missed it. I don't know why, and it doesn't matter why. And I couldn't call Kelly back, and I'm sorry, Kelly, about that. But when we go into overtime, they take away my ability to make phone calls. And needless to say, because I'm only allowed to go 2 hours with the program. The extra hour, I don't know why it even lets you go that extra hour. But we took it. And the last word I... Yeah, no, let's not argue. Exactly. And the last word I said on that program was we were on the subject of what this show's all about. And the last word I said is it gives us a chance to practice. I'm not sure if that last word came out. I hope it did because essentially, guys, whether there's one person, two people, or 15 or 20,000 people listening to this show, it really doesn't matter. What matters is at some point, people are going to start listening to us in earnest because we're doing something that other people want to be a part of or listen to. And we spend a lot of time talking about stuff to put people to sleep. But that's okay. When we come up with stuff, when the stuff starts happening that is interest interesting for other people. They will either call or they will either listen. They have those choices. And if they don't, that's fine as well, because I'm here because of the same reason you guys are here. We love the CFL and we want to talk about it, and there just aren't that many avenues to talk about it. So let me give you guys a chance to talk about it, and I'd like to be quiet for the next quite a few minutes. And we'll start with... Yeah, it's more than possible. I've done it before. What? And Manasseh, you're there, right?
No.
Ah, you are there. Okay.
No.
And we all talked about our ages on the last show. Manasseh, Ocho Cinco has made it into Canada. Let's talk about Ocho Cinco, not the problems that he creates by being here. But now, in reality, he's in Montreal. He really is. I mean, I don't think they'd have brought him here, gone through all the, you know, the border stuff to not use him. So now, how will they use him? And I'm going to ask all you guys, will he be effective? And will he play out through the whole season? Manasseh, you first.
Yeah, I think he'll, like a realistic expectation would be like 300 yards and maybe 3 or 4 touchdowns. And the reason I say that is he's basically the fourth, maybe the fifth receiver on the depth chart. You got S.J. Green, Daron Carter, Jamel Richardson, and then it's basically a battle between him and Brandon London for that fourth spot. So if he beats out London and takes that spot, I think he'll benefit from a lot of one-on-one coverages with, you know, weaker defensive backs. And if he's smart and he wins at the line, I'd expect Troy Smith to hit him on a lot of slant routes, you know, on short passes, and we'll see, you know. But I just think the excitement he brings to Montreal and the publicity is really what they've signed him for. And they need to sell tickets and create a buzz, so we'll see.
Mike Towson.
Frank, call Steve Richardson, Frank.
Yeah, I'm just looking at that. His Facebook thing's not up on me yet. I have to widen my screen. There we go.
I'm talking to him.
Yeah, no, that's cool. Okay. Mike Townsend.
All right. What's up, Manasseh? What's up, y'all? I feel the same way like Manasseh says, man. You got S.J. Green, Daron Carter, Jamel Richardson. He's going to be the fourth field receiver. And what he's going to benefit from is one-on-one coverage against the smaller D-backs. He's going to stretch the field. Realistically, I'll give him more than 300 yards. I say he might, hit the 500-yard mark and maybe 5 touchdowns. But when he gets the ball in his hands, he's going to be very effective. And just like Manasseh said, man, they brought him in for publicity, to sell tickets. He's going to have the number one jersey sale in the CFL, and he's going to stick around. I mean, you know, he did all he had to do on his off season to bring himself back to playing shape. He served his time. He just want to get back to playing, man. Forget whatever happened in the past. He just want to play.
We lost Frank.
We lost Frank? Well, I tell you what,
right,
we lost Frank, man.
Okay, Kelly, go up now. What do you got to do here on
Chad
Johnson?
I'm thinking, I don't know. I'm not a huge fan, guys, but at the same time, I think he's more than legitimate. I don't hold anything against him from his past. I just want to see how he works out. And personally, I think that he'll have trouble beating out London for that spot. If it happens, then I look forward to picking up London because he's a very talented receiver. You know, one way I guess I could see this going, too, is kind of like a G-Roy Simon scenario where, you know, he's kind of the elder statesman or whatever. I know he's not old, but in that group anyways, he's up there with Richardson in the top age category. And maybe he'll be their fifth, sixth guy and still make the team, and they'll make a sacrifice maybe in the backfield or something like that to keep them all on the what it looks like 46-man or no, sorry, 44-man roster.
44-man roster this
year. Yeah. So that's what I got. What about you, Christopher?
I think he's a circus sideshow. They brought him in here to parade him around in front of the
the fans and parade them around in front of the media to try to sell some tickets, to do anything else. If he never touches the field, he's accomplished what the team needed or wanted from him. Is he going to come out and perform? I don't know. I don't know whether he's going to grab the Canadian game. I don't know whether or not he's going to even beat out London. I don't know whether he's going to do it. Did the man have talent? The man had talent coming out the ears. He was phenomenal. Is his days gone? Everybody in the NFL says they are. So, you know, is he better than any of the CFL guys? I don't know. He's low on the depth chart in Montreal. I think he's a sideshow. He's just there as a carnival.
Ticket seller.
You know what? Everybody in the NFL can't say he's past his prime if they're not in his body and his shoe. Just like Doug Brown. I think that's the guy that called him a has-been or whatever he said in his article. He doesn't know what Chad can do. I mean, he probably can't even hold Chad's jockstrap.
Chad doesn't even know what Chad can do anymore. He's too busy looking in the mirror.
Yeah, but isn't it what the team thinks? Isn't that all that really matters?
There you go.
And if they bring him in even just to sell tickets, that's their business. That's their I'm sorry, go ahead. You wanted to add?
I want to add to something. If Chad Johnson did not show any signs of still having it in the preseason when they had the mini camps, they wouldn't even had to even waste the time making the ink on the contract.
Yeah, they would have done it anyhow. They're going to sell seats.
Man,
for that.
I'm telling
he's
you,
worth. He's going to sell more tickets than what his contract is worth.
And what's wrong with that?
Yeah. Nothing.
What's wrong with
I think
that?
It's
There's
a wonderful thing.
With.
Montreal is doing a wonderful thing for them, for the league, for everything. Bringing Chad Johnson in. I'm not dissing him in any way, shape,
or good.
Form.
Good.
Okay.
No.
I'm past the concept of what he's there. He's here. So now we have to look at why he's here and what his motives are, what the team's motives are, and how it's going to benefit us, you, me, the fans, the media, everybody. Okay? What's he going to bring to the table? And I think
all
he's going
I
to bring
care,
a lot to the table.
Tons.
Okay?
And Chris, all I care about, all I care about, as far as he's concerned, and I don't know who hasn't had a chance to talk because I had to go make a phone call or answer a phone. The important thing is, as long don't know yet. You know, the new hospital system we have in Canada, you know, going to emergency. If you understand what I'm saying. So basically, I guess all I want to say, and I want the rest of the guys who haven't had a chance to say anything about this to talk. All that matters to me, the most important thing to me, is they don't turn this into, let's see how we can help Chad Johnson to be good in the CFL. If he plays well on his own merit, and he's allowed to play well on his own merit, and it doesn't become that kind of sideshow. See, the sideshow part I don't want to see is I don't want to see that they try building this guy up to be something he isn't right now and has no right to be. As long as he plays by the same rules as everybody else, I'm okay with it. And by that I mean everything. Okay? All I want to make sure of is that this guy fits into the rules that we have here, like when he crossed the border, the government said, okay, he can come in, and he follows all the rules and does what he's supposed to be and be the kind of guy that all the rest of the guys have to be.
Oh, but Frank, if that was you or I crossing the border right now, we would never have got in.
I understand what you're saying.
I understand,
Christopher, what you're implying. I understand it. But do I know for a fact you're right? No, I don't. I personally.
He's not
I don't
right.
know that sure.
He's not right.
I personally.
He's not right.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Well, really,
well,
we don't know.
Crime. Mike, you can cross the border.
We don't know that he's not right, Mike. We don't know that he's not right. We don't know that Christopher's wrong.
But let me tell
we
you
don't
something.
Know that he's right,
hey, no,
and
I
we don't.
Don't
know that he's wrong. We have to trust the,
I don't
the,
put
the
my
powers
business
that
out
be.
There. I don't put my business out there, and not to put my business out. I have some problems. I can cross the border fine.
Okay, there
and
you
it
go.
It was much worse
okay,
than
it's
that.
Done. Now, who hasn't had a chance to talk about the Chad Johnson impact
Serge.
On this?
We got to pass it to Serge. He's a local fan.
Why not Serge?
I'll be brief. I mean, right now we're just, you know, starting training camp. Who's the only person getting attention right now? Who's the only Chad person
Jones.
Anyone is thinking about?
In Montreal.
You can forget
Chad
about
Jones.
The rest right now. So that's pretty much confirms what Chris is saying and everyone's saying is like, he's the man right now.
And we'll find out when we start the season,
will he still be the man? But right now, at the beginning of the season, he's getting all the attention. Everything is around
all the
him. Now, his performance does not have to be, like Mike said, you know, 300, 400 yards. Doesn't matter. Doesn't have to be. He is the star right now. He is the circus attraction, as Chris said. So I'm just confirming what all you guys already said so far.
But it doesn't bother you.
Here's a question that I have.
What I want to ask Serge
is, what are the other players right now? What is Duran Carter, who, you know, S.J. Green? These are the guys who had the spotlight. These are the guys that were, you know, the front and center. These were the showboats in there. Now, how are they going to take this, and how is that going to deal in the locker room right now, where all of a sudden these guys are
tossed
aside,
idea right now in the
and
sense
the media is
going to
do this? This is
not
going to be this
perspective. But I mean, you know, Duran Carter. You know, he's the son of an NFL player, but he's like, he's starting, and he's probably going to go to the NFL soon. So Chad is just, you know, he's the former NFLer.
Flavor of the day.
And the only other guy that's getting maybe second place attention is Troy Smith. So he's like number two. Because he's pretty much like a former NFL.
Some people
want
to ask you a question. Okay, all quiet.
But he's there, you know. So we got two guys starting off.
Okay. Now, Mike, you wanted to ask
what
Serge
I want to
a
know,
question.
Frank,
yeah.
Now, what I want to inform Chris on, when Chris made the statement what the other guys think about this, now what a lot of people does not know is Chad Johnson and Duran Carter worked out with each other during the summer with Duran Carter's father.
Oh, I know that. I mean, Chris Carter was one of the ones that was adamant about Chad Johnson coming up to the CFL to make him play. I'm not debating that. All I'm just saying is I'm looking for the chemistry in the locker room
right.
and how everything is now focused on somebody who is brand new.
You've got to put
somebody's nose out of joint.
Does somebody want to answer that direct question?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Williams,
you want
to
answer it?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. To Chris's point, I've actually watched a lot of the minicamp stuff in Florida and seen the guys interact and seen a lot of interviews. And I think he's got a positive relationship with S.J. Green and Duran Carter. I think that's set. The one guy I think it's going to be a problem is Jamel Richardson. Because if you guys know, remember, this guy used to be not considered not just the man in Montreal. He was considered the best player in the league basically from like 08 through 2012. You know, and then he had that knee injury and he kind of struggled and I feel like his ego is going to kind of take a hit because he's going to feel like, you know, SJ's become the man, Duran Carter's coming great, and now Chad's getting all the attention. He's become like the forgotten guy in Montreal. So he's the one guy I'd be worried about. Everyone else will be fine with it.
Gentlemen, may I take?
Yep.
May I be next? Okay. Because I want to go on top of that. I want to jump all over that. And what Manasseh said is right out of my it'll help me with making my point. Nothing better in this situation during training camp that you can concentrate on your game, concentrate on what you're trying to do, and not have the press come and bother you, and not be the center of attention, and not be reminded that you've been injured the past couple of years, and not have to put up with, were you lucky last year, Mr. Duran Carter, with the yards that you got? Instead, you got a guy, as long as he handles it right, you got a guy who's a flashpoint and a lightning rod for all the stupidity that is training camp and the early season.
Agreed. I was just throwing it out there for a discussion.
I hear you. And I wanted to carry that part of the conversation because I think we all agree, if we think about it, as long as this is a short-term situation, in other words, If Chad Owens jumps in front right now during training camp, it's not a big deal. Even if he's up front during the early part of the season. But when all the credit starts to come out where the contract work starts to happen, in other words, all the accreditation that comes out of games and out of players' ability isn't overshadowed by Chad Johnson and he becomes everything. As long as the talent and the successes that other players have don't get droned out by Chad Johnson's music, everything will be fine. down the road. Yeah. Because down the road is when they're playing for next year's contract. The beginning of the year is just time to – you want to concentrate on your craft. You want to do your job. You don't want to be distracted. And he's an asset in that regard at this point, yeah, early in the season.
I think they're just lucky that AC's not playing anymore.
Well, no, no, it's okay.
Oh,
they're taking pictures
on.
Of him on the golf course. They're taking pictures of him on
the
golf course.
Here we go with that again.
They're taking pictures of him on the golf
course.
No,
I just think he would have had his nose out of joint a little bit. That's all.
Yeah.
And maybe he would, but now that's not a problem because he's not on the
team.
It's
not an issue.
Yeah, it's a non-issue now. So now who else didn't get – Richardson, did you get a chance to talk about Chad Johnson?
No, I didn't. I don't know too much about the guy. But
how do you feel about him getting all this attention? Is it a positive, a negative? Is it something that just doesn't matter?
Well, I think it brings attention to the CFL and maybe to the Alouettes themselves, so I can't say that that's bad.
And within the locker room?
Well, I don't know exactly what he's like personally with his teammates and that. I'm hoping
But you're aware that he has a big profile.
I've heard that he's had some issues, I guess you would say, back in the NFL and with his wife or girlfriend or something like that.
Yeah, we're not talking about that because that's yesterday.
Oh, okay, okay.
What we're talking about, and what I'm asking you is, you know, he has a reputation as a player. You know,
I know
that he's
a reputation.
You know, he's
yeah.
been a great player. He's been a great player in his life. And now, let's be honest. Like, I could sit here and, you know, I could bullcrap everybody. He's taking a step down so that he can play football because he's not welcome in the NFL. We can debate why he isn't, but I believe the reason is that he's lost a step and he's just not good enough to be in the NFL today at a rate that he thinks he should be paid. So he's in the CFL. He makes a lot of noise publicly, you know, and I don't mean the negative stuff. I mean just, you know, because he's who he is. That's
gotcha.
You said it's a good thing. It's a good thing for Montreal. It's also a good thing that maybe he can play well enough to be a useful receiver in on the Alouette team.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the last thing I want to ask you is the fact that he has so much notoriety. Is it a problem for the other players who may want that notoriety off the hopper?
You mean like a bit of an ego damaging to the team?
Well, it doesn't have to be ego. You know, ego is something that every athlete has because without ego, they're nothing. They're not. If you don't have ego,
there's a lot of it in this room.
Oh, shoot. Are you kidding?
Yeah,
I stand at the front of the list.
I'm second.
There you go.
I want to ask.
But it's not a bad
thing. Could I ask Serge a question about Montreal while we're still on Montreal?
Go for it. Go for it.
Okay. Serge, I'm wondering if the people in Montreal and the news media, I guess, Jurkowski and these guys, I'm wondering if they ever talk about Wettenhall's complacency in reference to him playing at McGill rather than the Big O, which he, like we mentioned already, pays rent at both facilities. So he basically has his choice. He can drive revenues higher in a larger building. It's not rocket science. Do people talk about that there?
Forget it. You can't play, I mean, it's not the late 70s anymore. You can't play a full season. I mean, the rent, playing at Olympic Stadium, the rent is high. You got to have $35,000 to break even to play a game there. So that's out of the question, pretty much.
Mm. Yeah, if I could just address that, because, Kelly, you on Facebook, you mentioned a lot of that about you trying to pretty much blame the owners for as if it's their fault that their businesses are struggling. Let's remember that Bob
bought the
Ticats when they were bankrupt. Braley bought the Argos in 2010 when they were already losing money for years. So these men stepped into bad situations and are trying to turn bad situations into better. It's basically Barack Obama walking into a recession, trying to turn the economy around. And now you're pretty much the same kind of people that are here today blaming him for an economy that was already messed up when he showed up. So
I definitely
it's not
I
like
hope
it's not like Wettenhall did bad business. They're just trying to churn these lemonade.
I have to hold the business owner responsible at the end of the day for not being able to undo a bad economic situation. And they've had more than ample time with all three of these gentlemen in the positions that they're in. And the one thing that I find despicable is how the players have been promised next time.
They were never
promised
next time. It was never promised
next
time.
Yeah, they were.
Only the players say that they were. It was never in any document. It was never in any contract.
Okay, let's agree to disagree that there
there's
was any changes in the works in the future. If money was, you know, the fact is, if there's money available, let's forget about whether there was a promise that anything should happen. Let's start from today. There's more money available. The players believe that because of that, they deserve more money. The owners agree that they deserve more money. They just can't agree on how much that is and how it's distributed or how it's factored, if I can use those terms. But
you know, the one thing about this entire thing that really bothers me is that it's being raised at a 12% rate straight across the board to all players. That means that Ricky Ray and Durant and Lule and all of these Burris are all going to get a $50,000-$60,000 a year raise, and the junior guys are going to be happy with $5K. I think that this amount of money should go into the GM's bucket, and he should be able to distribute it the way that he should, that he feels right to the players.
Can I comment on what Kelly said, which sounded ludicrous and which sounded really dumb and which sounded like, you know, what's the matter with him?
And the
comment he made, which really sounded to some really stupid, but unfortunately I agree with him 100%. Owners either can make money or they don't make money. Some of the responsibility for teams is ownership. Even when they start in a bad direction or on a bad path, good owners put people on a good path. And I will continue to suggest, and I will suggest till my dying day, that teams like Winnipeg and Edmonton and Saskatchewan have turned things around without fanfare, without an owner whining and complaining that they're not making money. They've turned around and figured out a way to basically put their house in order. And
that's a terrible statement. Have you ever Bob Young or Bob Wettenhall complain or whine
first,
at all?
Chris. Yeah, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Have you heard David Braley complain and whine about the amount of money he's lost? Have you heard Bob Young say one thing
about
20 million?
Any names? Did I mention
You said whiny owners. Losing money.
Okay, Chris, before we
what
even get to that,
losing
even,
money?
Even
David
Frank's,
Braley's
Frank's
losing
premise.
Money in Toronto. Bob Young's losing money in Hamilton, and Bob Wettenhall's losing money in Montreal. Those are the only three owners that are losing money. So when you're talking about owners who are whining about losing money,
those
are them.
I thought everybody was losing money. I thought everybody.
No, they're the
okay,
only
well,
three teams
okay, hold
that
on,
are losing money.
Here, Chris, we got to address Kelly and Frank brought a premise of this concept that Winnipeg or, say, Saskatchewan, for example, that they did something right business-wise to cause them
they
to
sure
start
did.
Generating profits.
So
it's not that at all. If you know the region, like I know Winnipeg and Manitoba really well. The culture there, they love the team. The reason they were struggling before is because the team was struggling on the field. Once they start winning, people automatically are buying in. On the flip side, look at Toronto in 2012. You win
for
the Grey Cup at home. The following season, you were the number
hold
one
thought,
team
hold
in Eastern
thought,
Division.
Hold that thought, let me get this
and
out
no
there.
One cared.
Please hurry. If you want to be on the air and you want to be a part of this, we are now going into overtime, which means I can't call you. You'll have to call directly.
It's not
I apologize
overtime
yet.
We just started.
No, it's
We've
overtime.
We've been on for an hour, Frank.
It says I'm out in 10 seconds.
That's because you did the lacrosse show first.
There you go.
Yeah.
But we'll go overtime. And I was just trying to express to people in Manasseh, I totally apologize, okay? Do you understand what I was trying to do? Okay?
Yeah,
you understand what I was trying to do? So if anybody wants me to call them right now, you got about 30 seconds now, and I'll call you. But after the 30 seconds are up, I cannot call anybody. You'll have to call on your own. Okay, or use Skype. All right. So yeah, I'm sorry, Manasseh. Continue. I'm full of road apples as far as saying that the owners have some responsibility on the fact that they don't make money. I believe the owners have an impact on making money.
Yeah.
I believe they have an impact on making money, and I think some owners just can't do it. They don't have the understanding and or the good judgment to run a CFL team. That's just natural.
Okay.
I happen to think.
So,
I
which one?
Right.
That's even that statement in itself is wrong from the simple fact that.
Okay.
Let's say you brought Jim Hobson from Saskatchewan, right? He gets all this credit for turning the Riders around and look at all the money they're making and all this and that, right?
If you took
him and stuck him in Toronto with all the things he did in Saskatchewan and told him replicate what you did in Saskatchewan and Toronto, it wouldn't happen because it's a completely different market.
I agree.
It has different rules and different systems in place. It's not hard in Saskatchewan to sell the CFL. Try selling the CFL in a city like Toronto. It's not going to happen.
But Manasseh, I agree with you 100% that it's not a simple solution. But unfortunately, there are people in this world who are given a problem, who can't solve the problem, whereas there may be other people, if given the opportunity, can solve the problem. I happen to think that...
Frank,
a lot of these teams...
May I finish?
A lot of these teams...
May I finish?
Go ahead, Frank.
Just because it's Braley we're talking about. Braley is more than happy to be a BC Lion owner. He's not thrilled with being an Argo owner. He's made that clear. Now, you can't tell me that sets the table for a guy who's going to be successful in Toronto.
Well, it's because if he didn't, there would be no other option. The team would have to fold. There was nobody else. He did it out of a favor. It was basically the reason he did it in the
right.
first place.
No
one else
not
wanted it.
The guy. I'm thanking
else.
Him.
I want to make
I'm
that
thanking
clear.
Him
there
what
was
he's
somebody
done.
Else. The league was
okay.
going to operate the Argo. The league was going to take over
yeah,
the Argo.
And how would that have looked
no,
right?
the league
if
to
Toronto
over.
Had to be owned by the league itself? That would look almost as bad as folding the team.
I can't argue.
The team in the biggest city in Canada, nobody wants to own it? Like, think about that.
The league's owned lots of teams.
Well, we need them to survive. They're a unique situation. There's no other team in the league that is Toronto, and you know that, Manasseh.
I think Montreal is
my point. As a brand, what would that have said that no one, not a single person was willing to step forward and buy the Argos? That
would
have just made the brand of the Argos. It would have shut it down the toilet. You know, it was just to save face. That's why he did it. And even before him, when those two other men owned the Argos, Braley was actually helping them finance the team. People thought those guys didn't even own it. They were just figureheads, and Braley was still bankrolling it. So, I mean, to try to rip him or put it on Young, that's a level of disrespect to those men for what they did.
No, I thank him for the contribution he's made, but in this virtual studio, people were offended by the word guardian, and he is the definitive guy who's a guardian. I'm looking for an owner. I'm looking for a guy with a vested interest in a future with the Argos. Can we find one? Maybe if this it's not just about this labor contract. It's about the CFL getting a TV contract with TSN. It's about them making money. You know, you can't say one is right, one is wrong. They could
exactly,
both be
and
right.
That's why we're on the owner's side. That's my. That's
and
why I don't
no,
understand
Frank,
how
on,
people can
on,
be on
okay.
the player's side.
You're on the owner's side. I'm on the game side. That's whose side I'm
I
on.
I got that. I'm referring to,
I'm
to
on
Kelly
the game
in this
side.
One where
you think you
I understand
think,
if someone comes into it with their like when you talk about people's opinion in the sense you try to poison it, Frank, it would be like if we look at a piece of artwork or we talk about our favorite flavor of ice cream, then that's strictly preference, right? But
right.
when we talk
it's
about something
right.
that has hard numbers.
Right.
Facts and statistics that we can look
okay,
at.
Okay, what hard
then you
numbers
have to come
show
with a
that
proper
Braley's
conclusion.
A good owner for the Argos? What hard numbers
okay.
show that he's a good
okay.
owner for the
perfect
Argos?
Perfect example,
you
right?
still have a team.
That's my point, exactly. That's it, man. Oh, my God.
There you go.
Okay. They're losing like $3 to $5 million a year.
I cannot think of a better reason.
Exactly. Perfect. And I agree
you
with
still
that.
Have
I said
a
I
team.
Agree with it, but here's where I don't agree with him being the owner. He's a caretaker owner. He's not an owner with a vision for the future. He's only
he's
only
nobody's
lost.
Got a vision for the future, dude. They lose
no, no, no,
the millions
no. Hang
of dollars
on.
A year.
No. Hang on. Have patience.
Like
and
what?
Is it not? Listen. If it becomes this TSN contract, yes or no? Does it or does it not help pay the salaries of the players as they sit before the negotiation changes it?
Okay, the commissioner's been on the record saying even if the Argos received the entire TV money they were supposed to get, the whole $2.7 million, they still would be in the negative. Like, just
okay.
that should tell you what the deal is.
Okay.
So that's why the owners are fighting so hard against the players, saying we're not going to give in.
Let me challenge
one other point on you. You say that David Braley is excited about owning the BC Lions and not so excited about the Toronto Argonauts. He would sell the BC Lions right away, except for the fact that the BC Lions right now are financing the Argos. Then he would just have a bigger lame duck to have in his pocket if he got rid of the Lions.
Right. I mean,
you know,
to be angry at Bob Young and Braley is like telling, it's the equivalent of telling a paraplegic, go run a marathon. That's basically what Kelly and Frank are saying is, you're yelling at a paraplegic
saying,
get up and run.
I know it's not what
he doesn't
Frank
have legs
saying.
To stand on. That's the whole point.
Okay, I'm going to repeat what I said because obviously you didn't hear it because you were too busy having an opinion about me before you heard what I had to say. And I won't even speak for Kelly. I'll let him speak for himself. I said I have all the respect in the world for Mr. Braley and Mr. Young. I have all the respect in the world for them. I am so grateful for them being alive and able to support our teams when nobody else can. Okay?
And then here comes the but. Go ahead. Well, what's the but going to be?
The big but is once the teams start making money, you got to turf the caretakers and put the guys with vision in control.
Right,
you
and
know?
We're not there yet.
And whatever.
It's a great time frame. It's a great concept, Frank. We're working on that time frame, okay? And now is not the time to cut the legs out from behind the system in which it's playing.
Well, the least you could do, Christopher, is use different words than the commissioner used.
Well, in what regard?
Looking at the CFL as if they're innocent. Think about that original 9-year deal. What's coming up in 4 years? Oh, a new Reebok deal. A new Rona deal, a new Scotiabank deal. What's coming up in 7 years? Oh, a new TSN deal. What's coming up on a we don't know timeline? Oh, a deal with NBC Sports Network. Like, it's just,
but
you guys are making
Kelly,
the lead.
Do you not do things that are
things.
Advantageous for you
they're
and your life?
They're trying to shut
Yeah, Kelly,
the
commissioner already addressed that issue that you just brought up. They said in 3 years, if the league sees a $27 million increase in revenue, then the players have an option in which to raise their cap from that. So that's already been addressed. So that's a non-issue.
Right.
Yeah.
And
the players didn't like that.
Too.
They brought it down to $7
million. If we see this thing trending upward, we're going to cut you in on the next CBA, and that's not happening.
But
that's
why does it have to be
in,
a guy,
in the currency?
Why does it have to be a rolling? Why does it have to be a rolling cap? Why can't it be a cap attached to hard numbers? I don't understand why it's so difficult.
Attach it to profit, and you will get no argument from the league. You attach it to revenue, everybody has a problem with it because you're not taking into account expenses.
No, Christopher, I think you're being disingenuous. For that to be true, the owners would have to. No, hang on. I'll prove it 100%. And nobody in this room is going to call me wrong. You have to open your books to do that. And the owners will not do that. The owners will not. How do you know how much profit somebody's making without opening the books?
Yep.
Yeah, they already did. They did their whole meeting. They've been reviewing it the last week. They just didn't give it to the public, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, they have some information.
Viewing,
You're right. They have some
information.
They don't have Frank.
They have the entire audited account from every single team.
The big what-if here is, what if these owners are benefiting to the tune of $1 million+ a year away from football operations in other aspects of business?
That's my point.
And I mean, you
they're billionaires.
I mean, there's
they
tons of
be.
Partnerships and back scratching guys. And you know, you think Braley's going poor or owning the Argos? He didn't get rich by making stupid decisions. He's not losing that much money. I cannot see him losing heaps and heaps, like in the tens of millions of dollars, like people have suggested.
Okay, hang on a second.
I can't see that.
See, my dad is I don't know.
A billionaire. This is
he's a billionaire.
Hockey
I don't
camp.
Know.
It's a hockey
let
camp.
Mike have
$1 million
let
is
Mike
nothing.
Have a chance.
It's falling
let
out of
Mike
his pocket.
Let Mike have a chance. Mike,
yeah,
please.
I don't know which way y'all guys are going as far as this CFL PA thing is going, but actually, I'm on the player side, man, because
wow.
You know, the reason I say this is because the players are the ones who's out there sacrificing their bodies
oh
to play games for the CFL.
I can't believe
and
people keep saying that.
No,
wow.
Check it out. And the reason I say this is if you have players that's out there sacrificing their body and playing the game, playing for the love of the game, and these are the guys that's making your team win, why not give them a bonus or give them a little raise?
Mike,
because I'm saying like this,
are these guys
sacrificing
their body any more than anybody in the Arena League?
Yeah, they're sacrificing.
Or in any
semi-pro
league, are they sacrificing their body any more? Are they
training? Or what about the NFL? And what about the NFL? Are they doing it any less than in the NFL? Apparently, they're doing more.
I don't know, Frank, but there's money in that league.
They do twice as many practices, padded practices than the NFL. Come on, Christopher, stop comparing apples with oranges.
No.
To win
no,
the
Frank,
argument.
Listen,
Frank,
listen,
here's
listen,
the
listen
argument on that stupid padded practice thing. That is what the league says they are allowed to do. But you show me one team that actually forces their players to do that many padded practices. The DC Lions actually do less than the NFL does. So don't
okay,
that,
I believe
that's,
you.
That
that's
whole thing
fine.
Is just immediate play
so
by
then,
the players.
So
but
then
listen,
why not
the
be
CFL
honest,
players,
why,
reality.
Just disingenuous? Why do we have to be disingenuous?
The CFL players,
why can't we be honest?
They play two more games more than the NFL and make less money. A lot of guys want to be financially stable to take care of their families. And I'm like this. If the guys are – hold up. Let me finish because y'all talking. I ain't say nothing. When them guys – if these guys out here winning you great cups and bringing you fans in your stands, I'll give them guys a raise, man, because, hey, it's job performance. And in my line
okay.
of work, my job performance got me all type of raises.
Okay, Mike, I got a question for you then, okay? So you're talking about getting a raise, right? So let's be clear.
Yeah.
The owners are offering a raise. The issue in this discussion
right.
is the players are saying you're not giving us enough. So this okay. latest offer, the average player salary is going to go from $82,000 to $96,000. We're looking at a 12% increase across the board on salaries, on minimum salary, everything. So there's a clear-cut raise, 12%. We're going to go from $82,000 to $96,000 as the average player salary. Now, you tell me, is that a fair offer or not?
That's a fair offer.
That's
yeah,
my
like,
point.
That's a fair offer.
That's exactly
fair
what.
Offer
that's why. Just, that's why. I'm, that's what the owners are offering the players. The players are saying, no, we want the cap to go up basically $2 million in additional compensation. $2 million. That's out of the $2.7 million they got from the TV money. They're taking basically the whole cake. That's what the players are demanding.
I think these players want the average contract to be maybe $100,000 for low end. I think that's what they're trying to get. But the 96 is good. I mean, hey, they should take it.
Well, that's
because
not the low
ever,
end. Right?
You ever
Mike,
heard,
Mike,
where
that's
else,
not the
where
low
else
end.
Has anyone
that's
had a
not
12%
the low
increase
end. That's
on their pay?
That's the median, Mike. That's average.
That's the median?
Not, that's
oh,
the
yeah,
median.
That's the average.
That's the average.
Right.
The average.
Exactly. Yeah, it's
you know,
going from
82,000
to 96,000.
That make 60. For every guy that's making a half a million, there's guys making 60.
All right, that comes with the position that you
yeah,
play.
That
you're not going to pay. You're not going to pay a special team or
$80,000. That's not an argument.
About,
but just when you
no,
throw
no,
numbers,
they, yeah,
around,
no, they're not.
It's
they're
nice
not.
To when you throw numbers around. It's nice that everybody understands what those numbers mean. And so,
right, so this,
and,
okay,
yeah,
so
and,
just
and
be
now,
clear about
up,
it, Frank, because. Don't make it seem like the owners are just holding back and saying like the NHL did where they were trying to cut back.
No. The NHL.
It's just a question of how much is fair enough.
The press spins it is the NHL whole, basically when you lock out, it's the owners trying to get concessions from the players.
Okay.
When you strike.
So Mike said he agrees that's a fair deal from the owners. Do you, Frank, think that's a fair deal from the owners, what they're offering?
No, hey, again, I will repeat what I said and very simply put it this way. However you decide to gauge, I'm in the same boat as you where I go. The player should say, here, let's figure out what's a legitimate expense, just like when we do our taxes, you know. I get paid X, and I get to keep Y. And my wife spends Z, you know. But it can't be more than Y. I keep telling her, you know. And that's the way life is. You know, just
but
because you name a number. You name a number,
okay,
it doesn't
so Frank,
mean
it's clear.
Montreal, Hamilton, Toronto, all losing money. Clear cut. No debate. Everybody knows it. Every player in the league knows
but
it.
But they shouldn't be. They shouldn't be.
They are because it's the Eastern, dude. Ontario, Montreal, they just don't care about the CFL.
But
like
here's
they do
why
West.
They should
That's
be.
Just a fact
here's
reality.
Why they should be, Manasseh. Here's why they shouldn't
be. Oh, great.
Be.
Okay.
With this TV contract, how much do each team get?
$2.7 million.
It's not going to be 2.7. It's going to be 2.1 because the league is going to take a cut
2.1?
For the office.
Okay,
so each
you're
team
right.
gets
you're
2.1.
Right, Manasseh.
Okay, they get 2.1. And what's the cap?
Right now it's $4.4 million.
Okay.
But currently, and without you know, before the next CBA, yeah.
And what are tickets worth? What kind of income are tickets worth?
Oh, it depends which team you're talking about. That's the thing.
Right.
Toronto,
and who owns
if you want to talk season ticket base, that's
the
what
problem
you look
with
at.
The problem with the league that needs to be sorted out is in the process of being sorted out, where all the teams are beginning to get stadiums that are more suited to draw in the kind of clientele and the amounts of clients,
right.
customers.
Which goes to the owner's
want.
Argument that they need
and that,
more
and that's
money
good
in
for them, and I agree with them. And I agree with them. And just as I would agree on that issue when it comes to the Argos, whom, and as Serge before he left, because he doesn't like this kind of conversation, where, you know, we as owners, if we're owners, would love to be able to control our costs when it comes to stadiums. Toronto and Montreal have inordinate amounts of costs based on where they play. It's not about how much the players earn. It's not about really how much people how many people show up. It's more or less the rent that's a problem. You know, they pay an exorbitant amount of money towards fielding a game. And that's the problem. Those are the things that need to be fixed. And these issues with caps and how much players should earn, you know, most of that would go away if we could resolve the stadium issues for Montreal.
And Frank, can I say something here? Now, to the owner side and the CFL side of the coin, now this is just me. This is just me. If the players did decide to go on strike, I would actually, and I'd have mentioned this before, I'd take a page from the NFL and go plan B, and I bet you them players would sign that contract that they was first offered after a couple of weeks of not playing and receiving any checks.
You know what else, Mike? I'm not really well-versed on this, and the guys in the room here are very educated on the CFL, and you guys can help me out on this. Is there not a $6,000, and it's different for different players who have played different amounts of time for the CFL, but there's a $6,000 payday waiting for, I think, second or third-year players who come to training camp.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a ratification bonus that if they sign the deal by June 2nd, all veteran players get $5,000. All rookie players get $1,500. And to just show you how ridiculous the players are demanding that instead of $5,000, each veteran gets $15,000. Now, this just goes to show you what the owners are dealing with here. You know, when you have somebody
mm-hmm.
who's just ridiculous,
pure, unadulterated,
completely out of reality. Like, I'm amazed when I hear people from, like, Kelly's perspective on Facebook, they try to paint it like the owners are greedy. No. It's clear who's greedy in this situation. It's the players 100%.
Well, my issue with the owners is not greed. My issue with the owners, guys, my bottom line issue with the owners, it's not about – I'm not here to claim owners are greedy. I just think they don't want to be as responsible as they should be and control finances – in a lot more areas than just the players.
Wow.
That's all.
Let me ask you and Kelly then an easy question. What could Toronto and Montreal actually do to change the fact that people in Ontario and in Montreal just look down at the CFL? How do you change that? I mean, that's just that's the reality. So how do you change it?
Well, it's not a better product on the field because both teams are good.
What it is. Is perception is the biggest problem in both Toronto and Montreal. All right? You got a problem with football, the Canadian Football League, for the majority of Torontonians and Montreal people. Serge isn't here, so he can't call me wrong or whatever, so you're just going to have to take my word for it with Montreal. But I just happen to think that CFL, in a lot of people's minds, is second class. Not mine. Not mine.
Right. So now how do they change? What's the practical way?
Yeah,
It's not about changing people's attitudes so much as changing circumstances. The unfortunate thing is the cities, Toronto and Montreal, have not supported the teams politically. Politically, they have not been supported. And the reason that is that Canadian governments in the past few years have decided they're not going to prop up teams, especially when, especially in a town like Toronto, where you got a team that's worth $1 billion and makes a hockey team that makes $80 million a year, pays guys $20 million a year. The optics are not good for the government to help and create stadiums that are more suited to the to answer your question and to deal with your issue, because it doesn't have to be a 50,000 50,000 fan stadium, because we all, I think, can agree that the Argos suffer from the diminutive nature of the fans within a giant stadium. You know, a stadium that regularly can hold 45,000 people looks and doesn't look attractive to fans and reinforces the small league second class status of the team. So to answer your question, a better suited stadium which they can fill, a better, like, 25,000 in a 25,000 stadium will cause people to be more interested in going to the game because the optics are just that. And you can charge more per ticket because of that.
Okay.
You know, it's
so
what I call the
following that logic luck. Then, Frank, I want you to hold on to that. Then how does that explain Montreal? Because they have a 25,000-seat stadium.
You mean their lack of popularity?
Yeah, I mean, I'll answer for you both, because here's the easy
Montreal,
answer, right?
Montreal,
you just
is
need
different.
To advertise more.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Frank, how many Argo billboards or TV commercials or whatever do you see at all?
Not many, if any.
My point.
How do you change that?
But
marketing doesn't work, Manasse. That marketing
doesn't work. What I was saying earlier is that having a 25,000-seat stadium is almost like chopping your leg off before you run a marathon. I mean, like, you're creating a demand, but unfortunately, you don't have enough seats to put butts in to make a profit. And there's, like, let's say 9,000 seats behind the CFL average, and
you know, Kelly,
those 9,000 seats
that's
might be
not
the
true,
difference
Kelly.
Between a profit or not.
Kelly, that's not true. And I respect what you're saying, but I have to tell you, the Red Sox have the least seats in a stadium, but charge the most and make the most money.
It's the law of supply and demand, Kelly. Like, I don't know if you know that in Ottawa, their new stadium. The Red Sox only have 19,000 seats at Fenway, the Boston Red Sox.
But come on, you're talking about a franchise that is total. Oh, never mind. I can't go there.
They know how to market their team. They know how to market their team and advertise their team. That's why they're so successful. And plus, they put good product on the baseball field.
Plus,
but
the
we've
team
already
is ingrained within the culture. Like, it's not like the Red Sox front office has to work hard and advertise the market. Of course not. It's the same in Saskatchewan. They don't have to work hard, man. The team is ingrained in the culture. All the riders have to do is win, and everybody in Saskatchewan gets behind the team. That's it. That's their solution.
Yeah, but you're making
Toronto
like,
has been the best team in the East for 3 years straight, and nobody cares.
We continue to work hard.
Yeah, I got that, but I mean, you
could
do that.
Here,
all their tactics wouldn't work in Toronto. That's just the reality, Kelly. You know that, right?
It's not about Manasse. Unfortunately, this city can't afford, or at least will not provide, the money and or the resources and the place for the Argos to go that's more suited to their level of game.
Well, I mean, of course not, because they only play 9 home games a year, Frank. It just doesn't make sense.
But managing a team, an important factor in managing a team and promoting a team right is to not let negative situations get out there that eat away at you. And having 30,000 or 20,000 empty seats in your home field is a negative that cannot be, you can't suck that back. That's the genie coming out of the bottle.
See, I don't see that as a negative, Frank. I see that as an opportunity.
Okay, that sounds good.
Well,
I'll agree with you on the basis that it sounds good.
It's the same
like
thing
the
with Saskatchewan right now. It's building a 33,000-foot seat stadium. That to me is just stupidity in motion. They should be building a 50,000-seat stadium because they'll fill it.
No, they won't, Kelly.
Yeah, but what are they going to charge for the tickets?
My bad.
No. What are they going to charge for the tickets? You know, this is,
why does everybody want to raise the ticket price? Why don't you lower the
because
ticket
you have
price
to pay,
and bring more people
you have
in?
To pay the,
we're
a,
talking about
you
a blue-collar
team. You have to pay the rent on a stadium.
And it's
a
subtle
factor.
The ticket
prices are going to have to go up.
It's about atmosphere. Like, teams understand you have to sell atmosphere. You have to convince someone to say, hey, instead of sitting in your basement on your nice lazy boy watching it on a high-def TV, you got to want – exactly. So what they're saying is – you want a packed stadium. That's what sells. At the end of the day, people want to be
exactly.
at the place to be.
As
33,000, the writers can sell that out all the time.
Let's just talk about basic economics here for a second, okay? If you had a 50,000-foot seat stadium, okay, and you took your ticket price, which is about, what, $60 a ticket? 80? I paid $80 for mine. Okay, so let's just say average $50 a ticket. Well, why don't we lower the ticket price to $40 a ticket? And make it more affordable to families and to all sorts of other people. Our country, right across the board, as is yours, Manasseh, is in a bad economic situation. Maybe not all pockets are, but it is. Now, we're talking about football, which is a blue-collar sport. This is the working man's sport. This is the guy who likes to sit around, drink some beer, and watch football. Okay? It's not hockey where you can get $300 a seat. Okay?
Right.
Why don't we
lower
the prices and build more seats?
Because you're
let me answer that directly for Chris. The writers did that. They had that last year when they were hosting the Grey Cup. Their stadium capacity was about 44,910. And during the season, they only sold that out one game. That was the Labor Day Classic against Winnipeg. Every
did
other
they
game,
lower
they
the
were,
ticket prices, Manasseh, or did they keep
because,
them at the highest level they could?
No, no. The additional seats were roughly about $20 to $25 for most of those because they were mostly end zone seats. Right, so they were really cheap.
Yeah.
The problem is there's a certain level, like in every city, there's only a certain number of people that are actually going to go to a game. That's just the reality in sports.
Yep.
While you may have a large number of people that are going to watch a game on TV, there's only a small base that's going to make that trip to actually go to a stadium, pay for parking, pay for food, pay for the ticket, all that stuff. Cause it's a
and
whole
you forgot
thing.
The one important factor, Manasseh. Are they good seats?
Yeah, exactly. That's the other thing. So the
that's the whole thing.
They're
if you're talking about end zone
seats
that are garbage, if you built a stadium that had good viewpoints from all locations, which is what we've got in the Investors Group, that's what we're doing in Hamilton, that's what we're doing in Ottawa. We're not building bogus seats in the end zones that they can't give away. Okay?
Yeah.
You're not talking
and
about apples
and apples
here.
And don't sell the game. And don't sell the game.
You know what? Sorry. I totally disagree with that. You know, if we lowered the ticket prices in Toronto, I don't know about Toronto, but if you can lower them in Vancouver, I think we'd get a lot more fans coming out into the Vancouver area. And you know the reason why they don't lower the ticket prices and we're happy with bringing in 28,000 people?
Because
the Lions don't pay
that's all you can park
X amount of dollars for that stadium. They pay for how many people they have in the stadium.
Well, I mean, you got to factor in, like, in Hamilton, right, their new stadium, that's going to have
so do the Argos, by the way, Christopher.
Actual seats, right?
So
and
if
what
you
they
start
have is about 3,500 luxury
Christopher.
Suites. That's where you make the money, Chris, is in luxury suites and corporate suites in those boxes.
Well,
that's where the real money is at. Right.
I know.
So Hamilton,
I know what
when
it
they
cost
built
me
their
for
stadium.
My suite.
Exactly. So you should know. So that's where it is.
I do.
And now
I know exactly
because
where
of that, the Ticats, they sold every luxury suite they had. And because of that, Bob Young put an additional $5 million in their stadium to improve the team's facilities. That's a perfect example. So teams know, like, take Calgary, right? Calgary, their stadium is $35,000. What they want to do is they want to drop that down to $30,000, and they want to put more suites and boxes over on the top. So that they understand the whole law of supply and demand, and they know they need to put an emphasis on premium seating. That's where you make your money.
Yeah,
and
the owners – and but Manasseh, now you see you're making my point that I was talking about. Is that when you have an owner who has a vested interest in improving the asset or the bottom line of the team, not just its survival, that's the kind of owner I'm looking for. I would call a person.
What,
there you
know,
go.
They have that in Calgary, right? Calgary, the Flames, they bought the team for $17 million. The very next year, they're putting $15 million in improving McMahon Stadium.
But they're also
affecting
a better sale price.
They're also
affecting a better sale price when they want to sell the team.
Frank,
you know, it's not money
the problem with your argument here is that you are taking the example of the Argos and the very shitty situation that the Argos are in right now with a Guardian owner, and you're transposing that on the entire league and the CBA and everything else that's out there and saying that this is a bad situation for the entire league, where
it's not.
Only one very small pocket.
No, but exactly. That's just not true, Christopher. I don't – listen, the way I look at it, the way I look at sports, I don't look at it like ordinary sports fans. So I believe in competition, and the way I'm going to prove it to you is this, is that I don't believe in profit sharing between teams. I think owners should do their own thing, and if they can't make it work, get the hell out and let somebody else have a kick at the can. This business of owners, like in hockey – the Leafs go put money in Phoenix.
Listen to what you're saying, man.
No, no.
You're saying to them, like, oh, yeah, give it to somebody else. The problem is there's nobody else.
No, I know.
But we don't have any Bashmill guys that can drop $2 million on the Clippers.
As long as the teams make money and don't lose too much, there'll be a lineup. The only point I'm trying to make, guys, is that the league has to be better and stronger. And the only way the league gets better and stronger is with smart people owning the teams, not people who need to be propped up on their own. All I'm saying is, and take me for what I'm saying, don't spin what I'm saying. All I was trying to tell you, and I'll say it again, every ownership should be responsible for their team. I'm against owners sharing profit. Because then what you're doing is you're taking an owner who's being successful and having a profit. You're having him give an owner who can't make a profit, all right? And then basically on the assumption that that team is like that permanently. Ownership means a lot with success. The Argos have had success with owners and have had failures with owners. The Ottawa franchise folded, and if you're going to tell me keeping that guy that was there when the Renegades were there, if you're going to tell me that the team should have given him money so he could stay in power, that's exactly what I'm against. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm against.
But
I'm not against.
But nobody's arguing that. But, Frank, you know,
you said a minute ago, I thought you guys were.
No, we're not having a problem with that. When you turn around and say that you don't want the owner should get this league up. They should get on their own 2 feet. They should stand on their own, and they should become profitable, okay? And that's exactly what they're trying to
do.
But the players right now are trying to cut their legs out from underneath them with this new CBA.
The players should not be allowed to do that. And my interpretation of what they've said is basically what they've said is, look, I don't care what the players say. Okay, I really don't care what they come out and say, and I don't care what the owners say, because neither of them are telling us. They're telling us what they want, not what they need. What in my perspective, what I think the owners and the players need, the owners need a control. They need to control their expenses so that they don't go crazy spending money. I agree with them. And the players are saying, okay, you can use us to control budget, but also control your budget in other directions and make sure that you give the league, we want to be a partner, make sure the league makes a profit. We'll help you make a profit, but don't make a profit and then tell us we don't deserve any. And the way you tell them that they do and confirm that they do, you say, here's the formula, here's how much you get, whether it's not much, all the players want is they want so that it's not about what you give them this year. It's that if you make money next year, they know that they're in the good too, not just in the hold on, we're not making
the players have agreed to take off the
I don't want to get into
revenue.
The specifics. You go ahead and say the specifics.
Okay.
I won't debate the specifics with you because I'm
ignorant. It's already off the table. So the players have agreed that that's not going to be part of the CBA. Okay?
Good.
It's a bad idea.
Maybe Kelly can help.
Everything that you just said is a bad idea.
Okay, Kelly.
I
don't know how to explain it to these guys. The players are looking for a structure that reflects that when profitability becomes a reality, the player's salary goes up naturally with that profitability. And I don't think that's an off-base demand.
We're talking about fine, but you're talking about revenue.
No, I'm talking about profit.
That's not a That's not wrong. But my thing is this: if the CFL really wanted to, like I said, man, I threatened Pan B agency, and then watch how many players sign that contract that they throw out. I'm telling you, it'd be just like they did in the NFL. When I say, you remember when they did it? How quickly did the player sign that contract?
Then let them do it. It's all fine. Go ahead and do it. My commentary is based on the fact that I feel sometimes like the player's position is not understood, and it's really easy to attack players, even a guy like Ricky Ray who makes, you know, and I did it on purpose with what I wrote and what I said before the program started. He gets $50,000 every other week. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
No, he
attacking the players.
But Manasseh, we don't talk about the guys who are making $6,000 every other week, and that's based only on the 10 paychecks because of the 20 whatever weeks, right? And how often and how long they work and how much their agent gets, how much they spend on training, traveling to train, places to train, all this wonderful stuff, these expenses. You know, it's like when somebody asks you, how much do you earn? I mean, Manasseh, your business makes a fair bit of money, probably. I'm not saying it does. But a lot of it is expenses, not just for the owners, but for the players, too. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm trying to say. The owners, all the money that when they get paid, all that money doesn't go into their pocket. And any fool who tries suggesting that, and if it's a player, is a fool. Because we know it doesn't all go in their pocket. Every ticket dollar doesn't go in their pocket. Well, you see, I said that, so you got to make it worse. I'm just trying to say we agree with each other. All we don't agree with is on how to create a formula that is satisfactory, that doesn't create a problem for the owners or the players in the future. Right or wrong. Isn't that what the argument's all about? They don't want to get into a formula that's a problem for either of them.
All right, the issue here, guys, is simple, man. It just depends on what do you want the CFL to become. Like, what do you really want? Do you want the CFL to be exactly what it is now for the foreseeable future, or do you want this league to grow, get a 10th team, these teams are able to brand, market, get more people in the stadium, and expand as a whole? Like, what do you want? Do you want this just to be this what it is now? Are you happy with this?
Of course, what it is now, today, unfortunately, it's just for today and for the next couple of days. What it is now is you got a couple of guys, you know, it's like a poker game, you know. It's a high-stakes poker game, and it depends on who the players are. This high-stakes poker game, if we were playing, would be $20 in the pot, you know. And that's what I find disheartening, you know.
I don't think you're not even addressing what Manasseh just said.
No, okay. Here.
You're not. I don't even know where your can
is. Okay. Here's what I'm trying to say. I'm answering the question and not obviously not well enough. What I expect and want is I want a system in place that controls cost in the CFL, not just by the players, but everything, where the owners and the GMs and the coaches and all of them are as responsible for overspending and punish them for overspending. Not just punish the players for being overspent.
Yeah, we got to address that because the players made that a big deal. They said they're unhappy that their salaries are locked into a cap, and the owners and the coaches and GMs they're paid whatever, right? The reason we have a cap is not to limit the player salaries; it's to create parity in the CFL. Because if the CFL was like baseball, where you could spend whatever you want depending on how much you're making,
but
the Riders would be winning the Grey Cup every single year, and the Eastern teams would all be terrible every year.
The Riders would have been bankrupt long ago because that's exactly what happened to them. Is all the other
back in the day, but I'm saying
whatever
as of right
could,
now,
the Riders
that would
do
be
it
the reality we'd
losing.
Be looking at.
I agree with you, but again, it's not just I that's not answering the question. Neither are you. The cap as it is fine. The cap is not the problem. It's how you arrive at the cap. You know, we all agree that profitability should be how it's controlled. Whereas with the owners right now, they want to tell the players how much they're going to pay them. And the players want to tie to something. I am listening and answering your question.
Frank?
Huh?
Have you ever owned a business?
Yes, I have.
Okay, and what do you get out of your employees? You want the most amount of work for the least amount of money. Okay? That's a fact.
Yeah, well,
you want
what
the most
want,
amount of work for the least amount of money. If you can pay them $8 an hour,
but
you
what
would.
What you define, but defines
but
for me.
You don't get adequate work out of them.
I get
you.
You I get
you.
I accept
hour,
what
you get better
saying.
Work.
I accept what you're saying. But how much of what they do, all right, is tied, like you want them to be good at what they do as well, you know, unless you have a job that a guy can close one eye and half sleep to do his job. If you have a business where the input of the employee and or the commitment by the employee helps you make money and you want that, then it's not going to cost the same as someone who hires people to do things that are inane. It depends the kind of business you want. I want a business where my employees feel that they're contributing, and I believe in, I'm sorry to say this, I believe in the Japanese principle, where all the employees are there's limits, there's caps to what everybody makes. But everybody makes a contribution and everybody shares.
Right.
That's
the
part
where they
get
the benefit. Like if
socialism,
a player is a CFL player,
what are we talking about?
No,
here?
It's not. Yeah, no,
it sure doesn't sound like capitalism.
Excuse me. You're defending Christopher on this score, on this situation when it comes to sports and the Canadian Football League. You're the one that supports communism. This is a communist experience.
I'm sorry? How do you say I support communism? I think communism is a wonderful thing on paper.
Exactly. And the owners are trying to run this like a communism.
How do you figure
it
that?
Is.
No, it's the owners are trying to run it like capitalism.
Market.
The players are trying
no,
to run it
they're
like
not.
Communism.
No, they're not.
Yeah, they are.
No.
Capitalism would allow for anybody that wants to go into Saskatchewan and start a team because there's customers there. To start a team, and Saskatchewan could stop them, and the CFL would not have the empowered to do it. This is communism, where someone has
Frank,
a...
Frank, you keep going on this monopoly garbage here, and I'm going to call you on it right now.
Okay.
If somebody walked into the Toronto area, into Markham right now, with $60 million in his pocket, and said, I want to open up a CFL franchise in Markham, there'd be a team in Markham next year. So don't give me this garbage about a monopoly, because it won't be happening there. There's nobody there with $60 million that wants to do it.
They don't want to go to a – businesses don't go – they put a Tim Hortons where they think there's customers.
Correct.
And in communism, where there's profitability, the government takes over. Free enterprise isn't a part of the equation. It's the difference between – it is a monopoly, and you want to talk about
monopoly.
Free enterprise.
It's, close to
it's
monopoly.
Not communism. Look,
it's
not communism.
What's the logical conclusion to the point you're making? That would mean they would have to fold Hamilton, Toronto, and Montreal, right? Then you would lose the CFL as a whole. Then it wouldn't be a league. You'd have five teams. That's the problem.
No, it's not about anything other than the league is better. If it can't stand on its own two legs, if the Argos are not sufficient enough to survive, then let's fold them and let's say goodbye to Toronto and I'll find something else to do. You think I'm kidding?
No, what you do is sell a team to Mike Ilitch and let him move him to Detroit.
That's all. That's
but
free enterprise.
You see, Frank. That's the point. You just made our point, man. Is if the players got their way. That's the logical conclusion that's going to come. Because who in their right mind is going to stick with that business? You have to let that go eventually. It's like having a cancerous leg that needs to get cut off, and for whatever reason you're not letting it go. I mean, that's what
but
it is. So
if the owners and the players...
I mean, Frank, be honest. You're on the owner side. You just don't want to say it because you just want to save face.
No.
Because you agree on every point.
I said I defend the players because there's stuff I've heard that's just plank poppycock and it's baloney, and I just want to put it out there.
Some of the things we've heard about the players is ridiculously stupid as well. So
absolutely
you know, that's a two-way street.
And I agree with that.
I defend both of them. But
that's what I do.
Extent.
And that's what. And, but Mike, that's what I'm doing. You see, that's why they're saying. That's why Manasseh's saying what he's saying, because he hears me speaking in what makes sense for the owners, not the players. But I'm telling you, I'm for the league. I thought I said that earlier. And the only way for the league.
But you're not showing.
Only, no, no. The only way for the league.
You think you're for the league, but then every statement you make is about the players.
You don't
right.
see. You don't
Frank,
have.
When you say
the
league, the league by default is the owners. That's what you're saying.
No.
If you don't want to use the word
no.
owner, then
no.
just
see,
say you're supporting the
you
CFL.
See,
that's all you got to do.
That's where the disconnect is. That's where I'm making the joke about communism. Okay? Communism looks good on paper, like somebody bright said. But the way it works is the government takes over and then dictates to people how things are going to work. I'm a free
but
enterprise
that's not communism,
guy.
That's socialism.
Okay, whatever you, yeah. you know what? You know what, Christopher? Just take the point, and let's talk about what I'm saying, not what you want to interpret it to mean. What I'm saying and
but
what I
true.
Think is, you ask me whose side I'm on. I'm on the league side, the survival of the league. The survival of the league is to stop the idiots who run the league, all right, from making the same stupid mistakes over and over again. The
who are the idiots, Frank, that are making the same, and what mistakes
the
are they
people
making?
Who can't
define
see,
that.
I will. The people who can't see that if they get with the players and say, here, players, here's how much profit we're making today. This is the truth. The problem is the idiots are the scam artists, okay? Anybody who's in professional sports that wants to suggest that their books shouldn't be open has something to hide in a public interest. The public interest.
Okay, Frank. They in this last meeting they opened all the books that they've been
good.
Reviewing.
And then
the
players
the
now
stuff.
Have the opportunity to see the reality of how much money the owners make.
Right, and that's why the players took revenue sharing off the table because they realized it was unrealistic.
And here's the extent that I think revenue sharing should work. Okay, there should not be any money that goes to teams, but the paying of players. For example, if the players, and I don't know if this is going to make sense to you. If you can agree, bottom line profit, players deserve at least 25-30%, at least right now, a profit. Okay?
But there isn't any.
Okay.
Yeah, but
if there isn't any, then forget everything that's going on. Then what you're talking about is what charitable donation the owners are going to make to the players. And then it's up
that's
to the players.
That's exactly the point that we've been trying to make
the whole
for 2 weeks, Frank.
Exactly.
Thank you.
But that's what... But,
you finally
but you
got
guys,
it, dude.
That's
it.
You finally got it. It's a charitable donation. Good work.
Thank you.
Because that's
but
exactly
this,
what Bob
changed.
Young is doing. That's exactly what
it has,
David Brady are doing.
I'm not afraid to say something that you can hang your hat on. It doesn't scare me. The point is, if it's a charitable donation, then let's have a look at how charitable you are. But... Let's also look at the fact that when you say you lose $30 million, of which you get $20 million back because of taxes and or behind boardroom deals, because you've taken this loss, somebody's giving you money from a different direction, that money should count as well.
Oh, no. Why would that count, Frank? Come on.
You know why?
If
you run a restaurant.
That
you run a restaurant.
Right.
You run a restaurant. Yes or no? For every bottle of beer you sell... You should pay taxes on that. Should be part of your business taxes.
Right. Exactly.
If you're selling beer out of the back door for cash, you can't tell the government or reasonable people that you shouldn't have to pay taxes on that.
But that's not your
Frank,
analogy, Frank. Your analogy doesn't apply with that because that's still using the product that's being sold. And what you're saying is these guys are making these other deals outside of football that are completely independent from the game.
No,
due
no,
to whatever write-off
no, no,
or whatever
no, no, no.
thing,
no,
whatever,
no, 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 no,
whatever
no, no,
backroom
no.
deal supposedly
no,
they're making.
No. It's like when you know, why do people own sports teams? Why do people own sports teams?
Okay.
Two different
if
types of
you
people.
Can,
we're
you can say
about
that
here.
For whatever reason. Whatever they benefit outside
okay,
of the game.
Okay, what benefit
that's
is there?
Independent.
Let's use your word.
What the
benefit is there in owning
a
sports franchise?
Related. You remember in the hockey debate, that whole HRR thing, hockey-related revenue? It's the same in
yeah.
here. The players have only an obligation towards football-related revenue. Anything the owners generate that's independent from the game, that's on them. Whatever, whether it be from their prestige or name that they get from owning a team, so what? If it's independent of football-related revenue, the players have no right to it.
But what if it's not?
Frank?
In what way would it be? I mean, what? Give me an example that's even makes sense. I mean, how could it be?
Okay.
If it's not being generated from ticket sales or sponsorship
or TV deal,
where does it come? What do you mean?
If a team takes profit from if the owners take profit from the team and invest it elsewhere, all right?
But they're not
that
taking
that's
profit
not
from
happening.
The team investing
but
it elsewhere.
That, all I'm
they're
saying is
money.
That money didn't disappear. It isn't a loss. That's what I'm saying.
But
it isn't a loss. If Manasseh sells beer out the back door, if Manasseh sells beer out of the back door and keeps the money cash in his pocket and still puts in the bill for the beer through the business, that's
right.
Good
no,
business.
I got that, Frank.
That's
now,
all I'm
now,
saying.
What I
business.
Want you to do, Frank,
owners,
I got that. I
I'm
got
oversimplifying.
Your point.
I'm oversimplifying.
Right.
That's why
but
the owner, that's what my fear is.
So,
I
Frank,
say,
me, give me
what,
one practical example of how that could actually happen with a guy
I
like
just
David
told
Brady.
You. I just,
yeah, you're
no,
using
I
an example
told.
With me with beer with something because that's
well,
me using the product
losses,
that I'm selling.
First
are
of
the
all,
football,
are the
is
are
Bailey
the losses
selling
that they claim
football
real?
Merchandise
first
on
of
the
all,
load that's not being reported.
Okay, first
David Brayley. David Brayley lost.
How do we know?
David
how do we know their losses are real?
$250 million last year. Okay.
You what?
David Brayley made $250 million last year.
Okay.
He lost $25 million on the Toronto Argonauts. Okay?
And how did that
$250 million that he made last year were from selling auto parts.
Okay.
Because
and how much money
does.
How
he
much of that
auto
how
parts.
Much of that $25 million at the end of the bottom line did he lose? How much of an
million
impact
dollars. He took $25 million out of his pocket and he stuck it into the Toronto Argonauts, of which it dissipated.
And it became a loss.
Yeah. Rent, flowers, and he didn't go off and make real estate investments and lose it.
No, but what? But he made a loss. He made a loss. And is that loss a total negative to him? That $25 million. That's what he lost.
Okay.
He saw nothing of
yeah,
it.
Directly.
No,
okay, Frank.
Here,
let me give you a clear-cut number, Frank, so you understand the CFL business.
Go
an
ahead.
Operating cost for a CFL franchise is roughly $17 to $18 million a year. That's the expenses that you need to cover in order to cover a team, right?
Okay.
Saskatchewan generated $34 million in revenue, thus they had a huge profit. Winnipeg did about $24 million. They had a decent profit. The next best team was Edmonton at $18 million. They
but the
barely
only reason
made $1 million
is because they're
so
the,
Toronto.
They're the,
I'm giving you a number, Frank. That means
okay,
Toronto. The commissioner's been on the record saying they've been losing $5 million a year. That means they are making what $12 million a year in revenue, and that means they haven't hit that $17 million mark. They need to cover their expenses. So Brayley,
right,
every year he's been covering that $5 million. That's where we got the $25 million number from. This is on the record stuff. This is clear cut. So
and I'm asking
that,
you a, I'm asking
right,
you
yeah,
a question, and you haven't answered it. You criticize what I say, but I'm going to ask you again. Is a loss of $5 million at the end of the year a loss of $5 million to Brayley and his taxes? Does he lose that $5 million, or is it an asset? Because as far as I know with business, sometimes losses are assets. Yes
okay,
or no?
So you're saying that he may be able to somehow
well, that's
circumvent
why certain
that
guys
rule.
Are willing to jump.
Okay.
That's
why fine,
some
Frank.
Guys
that's fair.
Are willing
I get
to
it.
Jump
okay.
Up. Some
right.
guys
let's
jump
say
up
he's,
because
okay,
they don't
Frank,
really
let's
lose
just
that.
Go with that. Right, let's go with that. Let's say he's somehow doing that and he's canceling
well,
that whatever debt he has through. Let's just say hypothetically, even if he was. that would be good on him for doing that, but that doesn't address the fact that the Argos cannot meet their operating expenses as a business.
Exactly.
That's the issue.
That's more
here,
important
Frank.
Than anything.
That's more important, right. What Brayley does to cover his losses is independent. That's on
that's
him as
his
an
business.
Individual.
Yeah,
right.
That's his business.
But we're discussing the business model of the Toronto Argonauts, which is they can't cover their own expenses. Therefore, without him, they would not exist as a business. Because
yeah,
they're just not a, it's not a viable
matters,
business.
But why it matters, though, guys, is because that that whatever it is, 6% or something, were we talking about? What was the number?
But for the ownership, 6.1. The increase on the CBA?
6.1, is that what it was?
Wait, what are you guys talking about?
The salary cap that the
players are offering?
No.
Are you talking about percentage? What are you talking about?
I misunderstood something there that you were talking about.
Well, aren't you, Kelly, are you not trying to suggest that the amount of money that the players are asking fits underneath, how can I express this? The expenses of each team, okay, we can only right now, we as fans and as people outside of the negotiations, we can only see what each team is bringing in and that are publicly owned because they can't be kept secret.
Right.
All right? And the numbers that you mentioned, Manasseh, are based on the fact that these teams make X, then they have expenses, and those expenses, they even showed how much of the expenses were the players. And from what I saw, the expenses of the players were minimal. They were a small portion of the expenses.
Right. I mean, of course, the
expenses of the players. Everybody wants to say it's 4.0. But it's not the expenses of the players because. Preseason games, any preseason payments, any training camp, that doesn't count, any postseason, that doesn't count, bonuses, that doesn't count, anything else. So the players actually take in, I think the number, Manasseh, correct me if I'm wrong, was a little over $7 million is what it costs for the team, for the players. And that's actually where we're having problems right now in the CBA negotiations. Isn't so much the difference in the salary cap; it's all of the other things that the players want. So the league has raised the salary cap to the players of $800,000, but the players want $2.4 million, which is more than what each team is getting from the TV rights. So this is where we are right now, is the players are asking for $2.4 million.
I get
so,
you. Know, listen, we're on the same side.
That's where we're having a real issue.
Let's make something clear, because you guys almost sounded surprised that I sided with the owners on part of what I'm talking about. I've stated from the beginning that I am on the side of the CFL, not the owners, not the players. But I will speak when the players are being silly. But the problem I have with
they're
the players
silly
is,
right now.
Yeah, the problem I have, here's the problem I have with the players, and this is the problem. I've listened to you guys, and you guys make a lot of sense, you know, and the players have to understand there's X amount of money. And you might be right, and I don't say you're wrong, and I haven't said you're wrong. They might not be at the point, the league, you know, the league finances may not be at the point where we can clearly say, here's how much you can get because we're making this much. Because possibly, and this is hard for players to accept and hard for some fans like me to accept, and I'm trying to be the devil's advocate with myself here, is that a lot of the money that comes into the league disappears in a hurry. It's gone in a hurry. Because quite frankly, all the teams don't bring in enough money to cover expenses. So the discussion of percentage of income or revenue, to me, is a joke. Players shouldn't be asking for that. I agree with you. You sold me a long time ago on that. Because that's like somebody saying to me, Frank, let's say I earned $100,000, and somebody said to me, I want half your wages. I want $50,000. Well, half my wages isn't $50,000. It's what's left for me to live.
Exactly.
So I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, right.
Well,
and
somebody
the players,
does ask for half your
wages.
It's called Revenue Canada.
Well, that's true. And that's why if I gave somebody half my wages in that instance, if that were true, I would be giving them all the money. Almost all the money I have left. Because up around there,
that's
it's about 45%.
That's the argument that we're putting on the table right now, Frank. That is
and
a,
I don't
exactly
disagree
what the players
with it,
are doing.
Christopher. the problem you have with me is that I'm not saying everything you want to hear, so I obviously am not saying anything you want to hear.
Yeah, you know what, Frank, on this, and I think Chris probably agrees with me on this point, is that, you know, and this is why I talked about when it comes to opinions, right? And I know you and Kelly probably feel like, well, this is just a difference of opinion. Again, that applies in things that are strictly about preference, like flavor of ice cream, your favorite color, looking at a piece of artwork, something that's just totally based on your subjective viewpoint.
Right.
But when we're talking about things that involve hard numbers and facts and stats, there's only one correct conclusion. There's no such thing as a multiple look at
it. And
this.
We arrived at that
one
conclusion, Manasse.
Right, and that's the whole point. Me and Chris, we're struggling to get that back to you.
Let's talk about
the
profit. Let's talk about the profit and talk about how that profit is divided. That's what the players and the owners have to do.
Perfect.
It's unavoidable. The owners have to open their books.
Great. So, Frank, you've mentioned profit sharing multiple times, right, as if that's a viable idea. That's great in theory. The problem that's not practical is the league as a collective. If you take all the league's profits and put it together, profits and losses, everything together, the league is about $20 million in the negative. That as a whole. That's including Saskatchewan made $10 million in profit this year. 10